Welcome, everybody. The Board of Education meeting will now come to order. Mr. Ellis, will you please lead us in the pledge? Our flag is back here.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mrs. Stecker, please call the roll.
Mr. Kenwood? Mr. Bondrack?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mr. Howard?
Here.
Mr. Black?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Here. Is there anyone here tonight who would like to present to the board? I think we have one or two people. Mr. Shanahan?
Hi, my name is Tom Shanahan. I live across the street from Forest Glen. And I briefly wanted to address something that I emailed the board about regarding Curriculum Academy. One of the things I've noticed, I have five kids, and there are many levels and ends of the spectrum, as Jeannie Shue is smiling at those. And over the years, I think 41 has done a pretty good job in differentiating kids, particularly in math and English. Here at Hadley, they have advanced and lower and different levels for those disciplines. And it's shown for a lot of kids. I think they do well. One of the areas I think, though, that there's a problem is science. My freshman has gone to West, and the first thing out of every science teacher's mouth at West and other schools, as we look at private schools, is the kids that come from Hadley are behind in science. As I understand it, there's no differentiation in the caliber and grouping of students in science at Hadley. And to me, I just think that in the district, there's already well embraced a differentiation in math and English. It's kind of surprising we haven't done so in science. If you look across the area, District 200 and Wheaton, and Monroe in particular has been doing it for several years. Down south in 89 in Glencrest, they do the same. In fact, the science teacher who does it lives in our district. I've been in touch with Karen Carlson, who's very helpful, and talked about the STEM and STEAM initiatives that are being looked at, and I applaud that. But I don't think we need to wait on that. I really like the board to, as quickly as possible, take a look at doing some sort of differentiation in the science curriculum at that. You're really just going to shuffle the deck if you think about it. Scheduling is always difficult, but I would like it examined and talked about in a dialogue to differentiate these kids, because I think if you ask any teacher at any level, when you have a very disparate group, you're not really serving the overall populace in the most effective way. I recently got an email from a friend whose son is in eighth grade in science at Hadley, and the teacher sent out a teacher who I actually think is really nice and great, that 140 students took a quiz, and the mean was 18 out of 20, which is 90%. Now, I don't have the standard deviation, but a quiz on a 140-size sample that has a 90% average, you go to the high school, you go to other schools, that's not really very indicative, and I don't think it gives the teacher a whole lot of feedback about what level she's teaching or testing at. And that just kind of stuck out to me a little bit. And I have experience of my own with my own kids that they felt great about the other disciplines, you know, math and English, but science just really needs some attention. And that's, you know, I'd just like to... Again, STEM and STEAM look great. They're being looked at in other districts as well, but the differentiation is already present in the neighboring districts. If you look at the science Prairie State scores for Glenbard West, Glenbard South, and Wheaton North, Glenbard West has the lowest ones of the three in science.
In science. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. And I want to thank Mr. Shanahan also. He did write to the board, and we had a good kind of email conversation, and then had initiated some conversation with Karen Carlson, our assistant superintendent for teaching, learning, and accountability. So I'm glad that you did that as well. And thank you very much. We appreciate it very much.
So I guess my dumb guy question is, what's the next step?
Well, to give a little kind of fabric to the meeting, this is when public participation happens, because this is a business meeting. There isn't dialogue, and I know you know that. But certainly... You know, we'll have conversation about that, and that you've spoken with Karen. We can follow up with her and see, you know, what that conversation was as well.
It really would be something that would be taken into consideration for scheduling, if we were to do what you were suggesting and arrange students by ability or test scores. in some way we would be looking at that as a scheduling issue for Hadley, and that would certainly be a conversation we'd need to have with Hadley.
Yeah. I mean, I would hope it's doable. It's done with the other disciplines and electives. Nothing's easy, but I think it's doable.
I think we'd want to also look at some of the programs that you've described in the neighboring districts to see exactly what they do and how they do it.
Can I give you a clear example? Most advanced students who are good in math and science and English in the neighboring districts take chemistry as freshmen in high school. To do so in this district, you have to take biology in the summer, get tutored, and then take chemistry as a freshman.
We'll look into that data.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom. Anybody else here to present to the board? I want to welcome another AP student here from Glenbard West, a government student. We had a couple at our meeting, or three at our meeting a couple weeks ago, so welcome. And also a graduate of District 41, correct? Great. Thank you. Thanks. All right.
Well, next on the agenda is recognition. And for those of you in the audience who may not know, this is board member recognition day and meeting, and so it's our pleasure to recognize the board, and I am going to read the proclamation, and then I just have just a couple brief words to say on behalf of the board. But we have a proclamation for our board members this evening. Whereas the Board of Education members are unpaid and volunteers elected to sit in trust for their diverse communities to meet expectations and aspirations for the public education of their children, and whereas Board of Education members are responsible for providing the leadership, vision, and high standards for the effective operation of their school district, and whereas decisions made by the Board of Education members directly affect the quality of life in the District 41 community, and whereas Board of Education members are entrusted with the stewardship of scarce tax dollars and are responsible for maintaining and preserving the buildings, grounds, and educational quality of the district, and whereas Board of Education members are generous donors of their time and talents, therefore be it proclaimed that in recognition of School Board Members Day on November 15, 2012, District 41 recognizes, honors, and thanks our Board of Education members for devoting so much to the community and to the education of the community's children. Thank you to all of you. And while that's a rather formal statement, I also just want to say, because this will be, you know, perhaps my final opportunity in a public way to say thank you to all of you and be able to recognize you as individuals and as a collection of a team that has given so much to the district and who commits every week, every other week, and often days in between all of that time to the real issues that confront us in education. And you never really ask for anything in return. You don't ask for personal recognition. You don't ask for any kind of compensation or any kind of reward other than to know that what you're doing on behalf of the community and on behalf of children is something that's important to you. You don't take on this role if you don't care about kids, if you don't care about the quality of your community. And it has been absolutely my pleasure to be able to work for you and with you and be a part of your team, because you have really provided strength and leadership and tremendous support for the district. So thank you very much
on
my behalf. And we do want to make sure that underneath your proclamation there are two, one small token of appreciation and then a calendar. And the calendar is a special calendar. Our students were asked last year to participate in the first Glen Ellen safety calendar, and children submitted artwork to the Y, which sponsored this, and it was kind of a partnership with the Y and the fire and the police department. And so our students had a contest, and we judged the artwork, and so each of the months shows a different piece of artwork from all of our students at each of our four elementary schools. So that's just a treat for you.
Thank you. That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anne, very much. And thank you to all my fellow board members as well for all our time.
So next up, we have three presentations this evening, and the first one is our Hadley presentation. As you know, each year we come to a building and we get to hear something special that the building has chosen to share, and this year Hadley has chosen to give us an update on the Hadley New Horizons change process and the current evaluation that you are undertaking this year for that program. So, Chris, we'll turn it over to you and your team.
start off by kind of setting a context for where we've been. I'm going to ask Matt Edelman to come forward and talk about what the implementation was like and some of the evolution that's taken place. Heather Beeman and Karen Dimmitt will come up and talk about the process that we've used this fall to gather input and feedback and some of the themes that have emerged, and then I will conclude by talking about some of the conclusions, that initial conclusions, and some next steps we have in mind. And I'll just say that the process isn't concluded. We are still in the process, but this is kind of a status report of where we're at the moment, but we thought, since you were coming in, there's been such a great investment in this process that it would be appropriate to share it with you, even though we're not totally through the process. You'll remember that this began as a review and evaluation of the Hadley Exploratory Program, which hadn't been looked into in some time, and expanded into the areas of time and organization, scheduling, respectful relationships, team ineffectiveness, and homeschool communication. One of the first things that was accomplished was the Hadley mission statement, which has three main components. One is to prepare students academically and emotionally for high school in the future, to provide a safe and supportive learning environment that meets the unique needs of adolescent learners, and to develop respectful relationships among students, staff, families, and the community. The process began in the spring of 2007, with final recommendations presented to the Board of Education in January of 2009. Year one of implementation was 2009-10. The priorities that were identified in the process were increased time in math classes from 42 to 60 minutes, to ensure that all literacy blocks were uninterrupted 90-minute blocks, which hadn't been the case before. Some were, some were not. To develop a more flexible schedule to accommodate more exploratory options and more options for students for academic support. To eliminate pull-out classes and incorporate band and orchestra into the school day as exploratory classes. And to minimize early dismissal that was missed class time for students involved in sports and other activities. The results were a newly recommended exploratory class structure, including core extensions, so additional opportunities for students to take different classes, band and orchestra as regularly scheduled classes during the school day, 60-minute math and 90-minute uninterrupted literacy blocks, a new schedule that was based on 27 15-minute blocks that included an AB rotation, 10 minutes at the end of the day, which we call Take 10 for announcements, organization, etc., when students and when students were involved in activities, they left at that time so they didn't miss class time. Exploratory classes and PE classes for 7th and 8th graders, multi-grade options, staggered passing periods that alleviated hallway congestion, and mixed-grade lunches were some of the main outcomes. The implementation was assessed at the end of the first year around the themes of fidelity, how true were we to the plan, satisfaction, how much did people like what we had done, and what was the impact on student learning. And some modifications were made as a result of that feedback, and I'm going to ask Mr. Edelman to come up now and give us an overview of those changes.
Good evening. I think an essential part of any long-range plan is that review and refinement process of every plan inception will include opportunities to revisit, revise, to collect data, and evolve that plan to continue to meet the needs of the population, in this case, the students. What the great thing we did in this plan was very collaborative. We started right away when we initiated the first year one of the master schedule, we comprised a review task force. And that review task force included myself, a representation of our counselors, and also each department at Hadley. The goal of that group was to identify and problem solve any unintended ripple effects from our master schedule. In the issues that we identified, you'll see a separate handout that says Hadley New Horizon Schedule Evolution. And some highlights of that, we saw an issue at band in orchestra, a loss of instruction. We saw the workload inequality for exploratory teachers, even though they were seeing the same amount of students as they previously did. I'm just getting a little cold, sorry about that. Because they were doing that AB rotation, they were seeing twice as many students at the same time as opposed to their other colleagues in the building. And then student course conflicts. Students who took multiple combinations of music, foreign language, health at seventh grade and needed support, they just couldn't fit it all into the schedule. So what that group did was we did some brainstorming. We met multiple times over a two-month period, and then we came up with some recommendations to the next group. We brought that back to our Admin Horizon Admin PIA team. And then that team was comprised of our CSO administration, our Hadley administration, and PIA reps. And the goal of that group was to review those recommendations and enact scheduled solutions to that. Our solutions are also included on that separate handout for you. And what we did was, you know, we came out with a product that was better than our original product. You saw that we were able to address all the equity issues from a staff perspective, but we were also able to, through the solutions, increase schedule flexibility to meet individual student needs. I think we heard a little bit about, you know, that being a major theme and a goal in this district is to how do we provide each student at Hadley with the right balance of support and challenge. And we believe that we were able to accomplish that through this process. And then from then, what we did was we gave final recommendation from that group was to shift that three-year review process to the BLT group. And again, I did give a separate Hadley schedule evolution handout. And if there's any questions on that, I'd be happy to answer.
Matt, I may have thought you the notes that you sent me were a handout that I was supposed to make copies of for the board. We have no handouts.
Oh.
Were those the notes that you sent me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's my fault. I thought they were just notes telling me where you were in the process.
Oh, okay.
So I will send those to the board so they can see.
Yeah, we'll get them.
Okay. Just to run down, I'm sorry, run through it a little quickly. Some of the issues we saw was exploratory and core extension courses were originally designed as student elective offerings, but other considerations, again, the need for math placement, band orchestra, foreign language, and support classes, made it impossible to self-select. The solution we came up with is students are now scheduled into those exploratory and core extension courses based on availability within after we schedule for band, orchestra, music, math level, support classes if needed. And then what we do is the true choice comes in, we survey students. And we've done that 2 years since we've adopted this new schedule. And we determine, based on the student input, on you know how much they got out of that experience. And we also surveyed teachers twice and also parents once. And then what we do is now we increase the offerings and we adapt or we've gotten rid of some of the courses where the feedback was that it wasn't making the impact that we wanted on students. The second area that we identified an issue was the exploratory classes were placed on an AB rotation. And what that resulted in is that those exploratory teachers would meet with approximately 300 students at a given time, as opposed to 150, 180 that a normal content area teacher would meet with. So by that fact, it created a bit of an inequality for them. And our solution was our true exploratory classes, which would be the art tech, the applied tech, the fine arts, and the family and consumer science, are now those classes meet daily for 9 weeks. And then our core extensions, which are the one section for math, science, social studies, and literacy, teachers teach traditionally five sections of math or science or social studies, and then they teach a core extension. Those classes are the ones that have paired up with our band and orchestra and our support classes that meet on AB rotation. And what that does is it allows those students to have that fidelity of the exploratory classes, consistency. It creates a teacher's ability to really give that, meet their needs in that capacity as far as just making it 9 weeks of continuous and not overburdening them with the number of kids they're working with. And it also builds in that flexibility, so when students need that support and the combination of band orchestra and also take foreign language. Another group issue that we saw was students were being clustered, and that meaning that small groups of students would move together from class to class. This resulted in students not being afforded opportunities to work with a large percentage of their peers. And it also created a wider range of class sizes due to a limited number of pathways. And one of the solutions we worked from that is PE and exploratory classes are now combined 7-8 grouping. And that allows more flexibility into the schedule. And a byproduct we found is that the students have really benefited from working with their, you know, their counterparts. Seventh graders seem to be a little bit more mature, and eighth graders, the feedback we've gotten from those teachers that, you know, they're not a little bit too cool for school. You know, they kind of rise up to that leadership role within those groups. Another theme issue that we found was band and orchestra. When we originally adopted band and orchestra, it was by level only, and then we just offered multiple sections of cadet band or intermediate and symphonic orchestra, and then students were scheduled based on where it fit in their schedule. So you saw in those sections, you saw multiple instruments represented, and there was no real balance played within that. So you saw five different instruments played at any one section. And the feedback we got was, they likened it to having five different languages, teaching foreign language and five different languages in each class. Our solution to that was we redesigned the classes with input from those teachers by both level and instrument. So, and then we decreased the number of offerings that happened throughout the day, but we hand schedule those students first because their classes are singleton, so a little bit more restrictive. And that was able to meet their needs. And then the academic support. We found the academic support classes were originally designed to meet daily, and students with deficiencies in both math and literacy were only able to receive additional help in one area at a time. By putting them on the AB schedule, now students who need both math and reading support can have it at the same time. And then another area was a health course. Health was originally designed as a two-year requirement with 9 weeks of curriculum at both sixth and seventh grade. This made it difficult for seventh graders to take health, a combination of health, foreign language, band and orchestra, or academic support. There just wasn't enough sections available. So our solution was health is now designed as an 18-week semester-long curriculum for sixth graders, and that eliminates that conflict for seventh graders. And the last thing that came out, we really wanted to, when we started moving to more of a learning team approach by grade level content area, we were real cognitive about not losing that true ideal of middle school concept of a school within the school. So we looked at, you know, shifting those the issue was with 90-minute literacy blocks and mathematics being taken off grade-level teams, what we found was that middle school concept of teaming really didn't fit. You really had two science and social studies teacher, half a literacy teacher were comprised of your middle school team, and we found that ineffective. So the solution was we moved over to a professional learning team, which are now comprised of common grade level content area teachers. And this allows teachers of like curriculum to meet daily to design common assessments, align units of study, and share interventions and instructional strategies. And just a note on that is we've done that with a great deal of fidelity, but there are sort of some areas where there are multiple course like teachers who are teaching multiple levels of math or exploratory groups that we're still trying to find them daily common plan time. But one of the benefits we've seen is just the more fidelity in the experience instead of the experienced students varying greatly from depending on whose class you have. It's pretty much uniform. They get to a common assessments. They plan daily. They share those resources. Most teachers now share common quizzes and lesson plan ideas, and it's pretty much uniform. And when students do need to make a shift from a scheduling standpoint, it's usually pretty a lot less impactful. They're usually within a day or two of each other, so that's a great benefit to our students. Sorry we didn't have this added time, but any questions?
Just a couple questions. I think when we started this, there was some concern about incorporating orchestra and band and the quality of the program. Have we seen any of that degradation of the program?
No. Actually, the second half of this, some of the conclusions we've gotten was that the programs have grown, mm-hmm. and the quality is still there.
Okay. So we're getting more kids involved, and we're still doing well at the state level.
And that was one of those original concerns of when we had all the different instruments together. But we've actually now increased over the last 2 years. We've added a 0.8 to our to our band program, and we increased our number of sections from 3 sections of orchestra to 4. And we anticipate both of those continue to grow. And now we've added a 0.5 vocal music into the schedule as well.
And is it still the case if I take band, orchestra, and foreign language, I don't get an exploratory, or I get one less exploratory a year?
If you take band, orchestra, foreign language, you have 2 blocks within the day of exploratory options. Foreign language takes 1 of those blocks. Band or orchestra would take half. You get a half. Those would be paired up with our core extensions. And we've also started to look at an increase in flexibility for students. Our music teacher said they really, there are individual students who would like to take both band and orchestra, or choir and orchestra, and we've looked at creating pathways for that to happen as well.
Okay. Or you could say you get to take the best exploratory. Not that you're prevented from taking other ones. You're in band. Yeah. What else would you want to do?
two other things. On the choice thing, so basically if I understood you right, I get, if I take band and I take foreign language, you schedule that first and then you take my first choice, or there's no choice now?
No, the real choice comes in through the feedback that we have solicited ongoing from students to say, which explorers do you like? Would you feel challenged? Would you recommend it to your friends? Would you take it again? And the choice is by increasing those availabilities of those classes that had the best, the highest.
Okay. So if there's something that kids really like, you might have 2 or 3 sections of that as opposed to...
Exactly.
And I think part of the vision, as I recall it, was given in the exploratories, what I liked about them is there were, a lot of different options.
Mm-hmm.
To some extent, there was academic support, but there's also a little bit of differentiation in terms of, programming or science or different types of things that you could do. Is that still part of this?
It's still offered. It's still updated. We review that ongoing every year, and we keep on trying to... we've added into all of our core extensions a focus on writing to match our building goal. Mm-hmm. We continue to solicit feedback from students on what's working, what's not working. So there are there's probably about a dozen different options that a 6th grader can take, about 24 that a 7th and 8th grader can take if they're not in band orchestra or taking foreign language. Within those two-year period, they'll take most of those offerings. And then as far as the 6th graders, because I know there's a lot of, there's a strong support of foreign language in particular in this community among the parents and the students, we make every effort to make sure that every student who wants that experience as a 6th grader gets that introductory experience as well. So when we go through the startup day, there is a feedback form, and then the parents can fill it out and say, I didn't get this experience, or my student really needed this opportunity, or we'd like to have that study skills class, or we'd like to have this opportunity, and what we do is we work the next few days to try to problem solve that, and to a high degree, unless it becomes a numbers game where our student needs to take a support class, is playing an instrument, is receiving some special services here or there, then it just becomes a choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I asked Heather and Karen to come up and I'll talk about the process that we use this fall to gather feedback and then some of the themes that have emerged.
It's a pleasure. This has been kind of a long process already. But we met in June and August to determine what process we were going to use, how we were going to gather our information. Each department, because there's a representative from each department on the BLT, they were able to go to the department to solicit feedback in August and September. Those BLT reps then reported that department feedback back to the BLT team. Staff were also invited to two BLT open meetings where they were invited to share their feedback in person, and then the BLT met two additional times to process that feedback, kind of categorize them, identify the beliefs and challenges, and figure out what direction to go from there. Aside from the student satisfaction survey, staff survey, and general perception and feedback, they also looked at the MAP and ISAP data. So more, as equally as how is the perception, what is the data showing us? And there were many categories that emerged out of the 5 pages worth of feedback that we gathered. Some of those areas or categories included the impact of 60-minute MAP, the 90-minute uninterrupted literacy block, the mixture of 7th and 8th grade classes, the AB schedule, and the no bells staggering of dismissal periods so that all the students were not in the hallway at the same time. No pullouts for band and orchestra. The choice versus the required strands for exploratories. Support classes, dog classes, the use of Take 10. Advantages and disadvantages of the teaming model. And student social and emotional support as well as team building. And then from there were then several themes that emerged.
So Heather mentioned the two meetings that we had, and they were two-hour meetings, I'd say, where members came from the GIA staff, and we had notes and notes and notes of teacher feelings and opinions and assessments of how H&H has turned out for them, and plus we had some feedback from the departments originally, so we took all that feedback and the 5 or 6 pages of notes and came up with these themes. And I'm going to start with the positives. And positive number one has been that the pullouts for sports, or no pullouts for sports, and putting music during the day has been a huge resounding success. The music program, band, orchestra, and now with chorus during the day has grown exponentially with the addition of 2 teachers and et cetera. So that has been a great success. And teachers really appreciate not having to catch up music students because they're leaving class for lessons. Another positive, which Matt referred to as well, was looking at the MAP and ISAT data. And we feel that more kids are making more progress. We can't necessarily attribute that to the H&H, the program, but we feel that that certainly has to be a part of it. And in the spirit of continuous improvement, these are the themes that emerged that we would like to look at for the future. And the biggest one is that the science department and the social studies department are clamoring for more time. They see math at 60 minutes, they want 60 minutes also. Especially with the addition of Common Core requirements and the addition of writing that has been put into all of our curricula. Next one, I entitled these exploratory issues and just things that came up, like an awareness piece, I think, for our schedulers that if a student has already been in a certain art class twice, then please, they shouldn't take it a third time. Things like there's still a wish that sixth graders all had a required strand of exploratory classes. I don't know if that's going to be possible, but there's still that wish out there. Take 10. Our 10 minutes at the end of the day has some problems around it. It's not approached the same way by every teacher. For some teachers, it's too long. For other teachers, it's too short. And we would like to take some time and look at that 10 minutes at the end of the day. Third theme that came through is the dog ate my homework class. And I believe RTI is going to take that on. From teachers who are unhappy with the name to teachers who are unhappy with I want to say that it's hard to meet all the kids' needs in each of the dog ate my homework classes. If you're trying to stay on top of 25 students and they all have homework and organizational issues and you're the one that's responsible for making sure that each of those 25 students completes the homework they're missing, that can be a challenge. So we're going to be looking at that class. Theme number 7. It still seems to be a bit of a challenge for our schedulers to get the right kids into the correct academic support classes. And they are working on that. And the last one, I think came about because our old interdisciplinary team met every day, and because they didn't have curriculum in common, they talked about kids. And when they talked about kids, they were able to, as a group of 4 or 5, develop plans to help a student who is in trouble, whatever the issue might have been. And when we switch to PLCs, which is supported by research, we are getting more done in our PLCs, and we are making them consistent, and everybody's doing the same thing, which is wonderful. But there is a sense of loss among teachers for a lack of immediate responsiveness to individual student needs. And we would like to look at that and make sure that what we had put in place when we went to PLCs is still functioning as well as the old interdisciplinary team.
How many kids do we have in academic support?
I don't know.
Is it 20% of the population, 50%, more than 50%?
No, it's going to be well less than 20%.
I'm sorry, less than 20%?
Yes. You might see about 60 students in math, about 45 in literacy.
So that's basically the whole academic support group.
Yes, but then you have students who are receiving support through ELL services. We've really targeted streamlined the type of support that those students receive. You also have students who, while they don't have any outliers in any test group for math and reading, but struggle across the board and need some just general support. We have a call case manager for our grad ed students, and those students might see a daily dog class.
Is there a correlation, if I'm in academic support for math, I'm probably in academic support for English, or is it really two distinct populations?
You see a large percentage of students that are struggling in literacy will struggle in math as well. It's a comprehension piece. It doesn't pull the other way quite as much.
So, sorry, for those of us who don't have any kids in the middle school, what's the dog ate my homework class? Is that like a study hall or what?
In the gen ed setting, it is a place for students to, there is some direct instruction curriculum for teaching kids study skills. Then there is also an organizational, and there's also the study hall component where they're able to work on work, get additional help. So it's a combination of both to meet the kids based on what they need, whether it's academic, organizational, social, emotional.
So do the kids choose that class, or is the class chosen for them?
It's based on their needs. I mean, some kids would like the dog class. Other kids really need it. I don't know. I think
the majority of sixth graders will take some combination of either the dog study skills class, math, or reading support, or a combination of all the two out of those three. By seventh and eighth grade, they're placing them largely by design. So students who really continue to struggle with work completion and organizational skills, they'll be targeted and for continued support. The majority of seventh and eighth graders do not take a dog class.
Just have one.
I was going to say, Matt, I know that that's the design of the class, but the reality is that that's not necessarily what's happening. I know that that's the design for it to be that way, but I think often kids are ending up in that class because that's what's available, you know, during the scheduling piece of it, sometimes it happens. That said, it's not always a bad thing when it happens. I mean, I had an eighth grader who I normally would not have wanted, I would have preferred her to have a different exploratory class, but given her schedule, given her homework load and her after-school schedule, it actually was something that was a blessing in disguise for her because it gave her an opportunity to work at a different pace and meet with teachers if she needed to make up things. So I think as parents often we look at that, you know, for a 7th and 8th grader and go, oh, they don't need a study hall. The truth is they go to high school and they need the study hall. So learning how to use the study hall properly ends up being a good thing for them.
And we've addressed it more recently. Each year we've kind of looked at on opposite of, say, band and orchestra, we've made sure that there's now four extensions, whereas opposed there might have been just a limited to a dog class. And we've started increasing our four extensions for 7th and 8th grade by adding the writing component. We went from a semester-long, a 9-week curriculum over a semester on an AB rotation. We've increased those four extensions to year-long experiences, which has increased our ability to pair those up. So if you're correct, in the years past, we've had more limitations. But now, when we have those high volume of core extensions, which again kind of coincide with the band and orchestra kids, we've made sure that there are core extensions. But you're also still correct. We keep on getting students who'll come and they'll start out with a sports and society or a film critic class, and then the parent or the student will come to talk to a counselor and say, you know, I have so many commitments before and after school. I really need some time to get some work done. So we try to accommodate those whenever possible.
I think just a quick positive takeaway before you finish up, and that is it was important as we looked at the process of Hadley New Horizons to make sure that what you just gave to us, the status update, was that there's used the term fidelity, which is really important that we do review. And, you know, some of the, Sam, to your point about not having kids at the junior high level yet, the names of some of the courses were done originally because the intention was that the children would have a chance to choose, and we wanted to make it interesting. I remember having listening into that conversation. What I feel good about is that, as you've done, Karen, you identified here's the pluses and here's where we need to continue to improve. And there's also, I'm going to make an assumption, a reality that with the number of children fluctuating from 6th to 7th to 8th grade, if we have a large 8th grade class and a smaller 6th grade class come in, then some of that scheduling also has to shift every single year because we have a finite number of spaces. And so there's never not a time, it seems to me, that you're not reworking the process. Is that accurate? Yeah. So that's a good thing, so that we're always keeping our eye on how do we continue to make this better and do it so that we're trying to attend to some of the academic as well as social-emotional needs of the kids as well. So thank you. Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Just briefly, some conclusions and next steps. Modifications have been made along the way to respond to problems and unintended consequences, so we've tried to keep up with in terms of that evolution that Matt described. Mm-hmm. Students have more opportunities for different classes and are generally pleased with these classes. Band and orchestra numbers are increasing. Moving these classes into the day has been a positive. Chorus is now a class as well, and we hope we'll see similar results in terms of interest and participation in event program. Cross-grade classes have more demonstrated advantages than disadvantages. A 60-minute math class gives more time for problem solving. Math scores in math, the terms of students making growth, increased last year from 68% to 84%. 90-minute uninterrupted literacy provides more consistent experiences for all students. Math scores last year in reading went from 57 to 68% in terms of students making growth. On the ISAT, we're seeing more students who are moving from the meets to the exceeds category than we have in past years as well. We believe that the required exploratory strand for sixth grade is no longer a realistic option just based on the scheduling parameters that we have. More opportunities for support for struggling and below grade level students have been provided. The new teaming model increases the consistency of the rigor for teaching and supports the school-wide goal of writing in the content areas. Student social and emotional support is given differently now. The student progress monitoring process is a primary support mechanism for giving that support. When Take 10 time is inconsistently used, spaces used for some Take 10 classes like PE are less conducive to reading announcements, etc. Our next steps are to convene, with the help of Karen Carlson, which has already begun, a small task force to explore the issue of adding time for science and social studies classes. The first meeting was on November 6th. No changes are being proposed for next school year. This is a longer-term study process, but that study is underway, and we'll look at the ramifications of those kinds of changes. The BLT will study the Take 10 time and how it might be help to be a more consistent experience for students. BLT will also examine how we presently support students socially and emotionally and determine if our current supports are adequate. And then, as Karen mentioned also, our RTI Tier 2 committee is going to be taking a look at the impact of the current Dog Ate My Homework classes and see both how that supports the Tier 2 students and what modifications, if any, might be needed to be made in that program. Mm-hmm. So again, we're not totally finished with this yet, but this is what we have at this time. So I'd again open it up for questions or comments.
Two more. The exploratory classes, the 30-minute to 15-minute blocks, or is it 45?
It's 45.
Mm-hmm. And science is 45. So there seems to be a theme of time here. Does adding another 15-minute block help solve a lot of these problems, or adding two 15-minute blocks? Or?
Well, there's probably two options. One is either adding time to what we have now or redistributing the time that we have now. So those are two aspects that committee will grapple with. We're also looking at why we want more time, and it's not just to cover more content, it's to allow more time for the writing that is the expectation across the board now, and not that those teachers necessarily teach writing, but students have to do more writing in those classes, so to not be at the expense of the content of the curriculum.
Okay. Got my post-it notes here, so I'll try to stay on task and keep looking at them as I go through it. First of all, I want to say that from a historical perspective, I did not have children at the school when H&H and looking at it began. So I didn't know, as a parent and a board member, as a parent, I didn't know what it was. It was the old way, and this is have the new horizons. As a board member, I've had the experience of listening to other parents and other board members as from the old way we did it to our current system. And one of the things that struck me as a board member was the amount of collaboration between our staff, our administration, our parent community was, to me, unprecedented. It was one of those things to watch it. You didn't know who the staff member was versus a parent if you didn't know these people, or and just the enthusiasm by everyone involved for change, that it wasn't just change to change, that it was a well-thought-out, data-driven, child-focused change.
and which was best for kids. And so from that perspective, even though this is not perfect, and it never will be perfect, what has occurred over these years has been amazing to see develop. And when we always talk about it from the academic perspective, but one of the things, Chris, about you that's always struck me is, as academic as you're required to be, your focus is often kids first and the social-emotional piece. And as a parent, we can't thank you enough for always taking that approach first, because this is a horrible age for children and for their families who have to deal with them. So, can you tell I still have kids in this age?
We didn't have any issues in our family.
But the social-emotional piece that you didn't really talk about too much was the connection between our staff and our kids, and the focus of trying to find even one staff member through that 3-year period that these kids have, even just one. And I think that while I know, Karen, you, from your perspective, the PLC versus the team interdisciplinary, as a parent having kids who've been through this, I actually think that the approach of the PLCs and the department has been a better experience for a lot of these kids, because they have a way of knowing a teacher within a discipline that might cross over, or they find that these teachers do know them. And I know when you go to a conference, to your parent-teacher conference, I was struck by how listening to different departments talk about meeting with the people in the other departments and knowing the kids, and not just knowing my kid, being able to refer about things they're doing with other kids and other presentations we've seen over the years. So I'm sure that there's a way to do that, but I'm seeing it the way that you guys are with the PLCs, and I think the other part about that is the consistency that we have. So regardless of the teacher you have, they're covering the same content. They might teach it a little bit differently, but you're seeing the same content being taught that way across the board. The lunchroom is fabulous. The multi-age groups in there, it's wonderful. It's not a bad thing. It was the scary thing at first to see it happen, but it's been a good thing. It's been allowing children to know kids in other grades and move through the process. The passing periods in the hallways, quiet. I mean, again, the no bell, people were nervous. It was a great thing. I want to just kind of hit, though, about scheduling. One of the things, though, and I know Karen and I have kind of talked a little bit about it, is while, again, in theory, a student shouldn't have the same class more than once. Mr. T can attest to, my daughter's been in his art tech class every year. For 3 years. And while she may love it, on one hand, it denies another child maybe a seat in a class that they would like, but it also denies her the opportunity to try something else. And so while I know you guys are talking about the core extension, I'm not sure in practice if it's necessarily happening that way because of different scheduling. And these are kids that are not just, they're not in band and orchestra. So you really should, or maybe not in any of the support classes. So their schedule should be wide open to place them wherever, and I don't think that that's necessarily happening that way. And the same with, in terms of a team approach, while we, in theory, there is no team and the kids should have whatever teacher, I think in practice what is happening in some of the grade levels is you're seeing kids have, and I'll just use 8th grade for an example, you're having Bruno, Luzak, Giovingo, and Wiemler as a group of staff teachers, and not a multi, not in different ones. And again, it could just be where some of them are getting plugged in, but I think we're missing some of that. Because I do think most of our kids, while we have kids in academic support, you do have a larger group of kids who are not in gifted and they're not in support, that again, we have these opportunities. I'm hoping, again, I know the scheduling has been somewhat of a nightmare over the years and trying to find to piece together, and it is an ever-evolving system, but I would say overall, this has been a wonderful, wonderful change, and again, our kids, last year's class, this year's class, they know no other way of the way their middle school experience is supposed to be, And it's been wonderful collaboration to watch our staff working together and even being able to confidently bring forward things that they need to, you know, things that we need to work on. That's the way it should be. We should be working together, and it's nice to see that that's happening. So thank you.
Well, we want to thank the board for the support and the resources, because this wouldn't have happened without that. And we do feel very good about it. We think we're way different than we were before. You mentioned the lunchroom. You know, we have folks come in, like the magazine people who work in a lot of schools, and have told us that we've got the best lunchroom in any school that we work in. And that says something. It's a lot different than when I was here 9 years ago. So we're happy about things like that. You mentioned the social-emotional piece. We were probably remiss in not including in here our student team building initiative, which has grown over the past 3 years, and that now we're giving 5 half-days to that student, that social-emotional piece. And that there's a really strong commitment to that. It's not like, oh, gee, we have to do this again. Staff members are bought into it. It's really all about that relationship and knowing the kids and letting the kids see the teachers in a little different light. So all those little things that kind of just add up to a real supportive culture for kids, and something that we really strive to challenge them academically and support them socially and emotionally. So I'd entertain any other questions, or just once again, thank you very much for your support.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris.
We're going to stay on Hadley, even though our next presentation is really a discussion item for the board. So we are going to ask that perhaps you can hold your questions for the presentation. We'll come back to it later when we talk about the remodeling of the Hadley LMC. But before I turn it over to Bob and we start that, I also want to note that Chris Abbott is here, and he may jump in to assist Bob at different points to talk about the vision of the LMC at Hadley. I also want to very quickly congratulate the presenters at the National Middle School Conference, who just returned after doing 2 presentations at the National Middle School Conference. And Jill, the presentation that was on teaming, I believe.
Blessed with being able to present a 75-minute presentation on our student team building days. So there were a group of 6 of us that went, and actually 2 of the other teachers also had a 25-minute roundtable to present on co-teaching to ELL students.
So Myra, you did one on ELL co-teaching, is that correct? And Hadley was voted in the top 10 presentations of the entire conference. So that's really impressive too.
Yeah, that's great.
So we're going to talk a little bit about the LMC and its contextual relationship to the long-range plan, Goal 1, 21st Century Learning, creating a dynamic environment in the Learning Center where students have the ability to access more flexible learning experiences from every department, project-based learning as we expand that. And so that's really, you know, very briefly, the educational context of trying to recreate a space at Hadley with limited resources that will symbolize and inspire 21st century learning.
So I'll be here just to give you from a building perspective in terms of what this space may eventually look like. We brought together a group of several individuals, administrators, both here at CSO and here at Hadley, teachers. We had some parents. We've been in a number of meetings that began last spring through the summer and into this fall. And now we're here. The Finance Committee has seen this proposal. We're here to present it to the board for discussion, and then looking at our next board meeting to go out to bid for this remodeling of the Hadley LMC. So just to give you some ideas in terms of what conceptually it's going to look like, if you were out in a courtyard, hopefully not as chilly as today, but looking in, this is what you would see from the courtyard looking in through these windows here. Basically what's going to happen is we've value priced this, and that we're not going to replace these 4 sections of glass, but rather refinish the existing glass, or the existing metals that are around here. Holding in the glass. We're going to replace the doors with glass doors and then new window treatments across the wall. So if you were to step out of this space here and go down the west hallway and look, go down the east hallway and look west, this is what your area is going to look like as you would approach, and this would be the new entrance. The entranceway will move from its existing spot here at the LMC down sort of center point along that back wall, and it will actually align with the, as you walk in the front door at the administrative offices. So it will be sort of a focal highlight of, as you walk in, you're going to see this sort of grand space as you enter. This would be coming from that south hallway, walking north. You would approach, notice the new floor detail, sort of highlighting the area, new soffit with individualized lighting, glass doors that will look into the facility. Here is the existing, would be the existing library. This is what we call a demonstration area over here. This again would be approaching the entranceway to it, just a little greater detail in terms of what this space may look like. This again would be this long hallway down here looking east. And this is once you would be inside the new main entrance, looking out into that hallway. Notice the way the glass is created here in sort of a half moon shape, the soffit with the lighting, glass doors, and so forth. This would be once you enter the library, you would come in through that new doorway. You would be facing north. Off to your left would be this, as we call it, a demonstration area. We won't have all different levels of seating. The changes in seating will be occurred through the use of different heights of furniture. And notice the different type of furniture. You get a little idea in terms of what the furniture will look like in this space here. This is inside the demonstration lab itself. Mike is still working on a technology plan in terms of what will actually occur in this wall up against here. Two different levels of furniture. Notice the glass walls. The hope is to, and we've worked with it with our group and through the architects, as we would envision this as a much more flexible space than it currently is. This soffit that will be up against this back west wall here, we're going to try to keep that up as high as we can. The ceilings are going to be raised. We're looking at this as these doors to open all the way, and this to be sort of a learning center or a meeting space for our faculty, district-wide faculty. We have estimates that with the proper seating and so forth, we can see 230 to 240 people in here. All the furniture in here will be movable. The stacks for the bookshelves, student tables, desk chairs, even the, which you'll see in a little detail in just a couple of moments, the circulation desk will be on wheels and can actually be moved out of the way. So we look, Karen, during curriculum times, is always looking for larger learning spaces for our staff, and this could be a spot where we would be able to include almost all the staff in a particular type of activity. So this is this would actually be looking back from this direction back into the western area. Notice the way that the checkout area has been designed. It's circular. Where Chris has asked for three learning or three working spaces in here. A soffit to sort of identify that as a main gathering point. You'll notice the demonstration area back here. Up against this wall, along the southern wall as it exists now, we'll have three meeting rooms in there for kids to get together and work on group projects. Each space will have seating for between 8 and 10 kids, so they'll be able to accommodate 25 to 30 students in there, all working on different types of projects or whatever may be going on in that space for any particular time. That will be encased in glass. There'll also be bookshelves in there and so forth. Notice the different types of furniture that are happening here. It provides for some flexibility in terms of gathering students in different ways, whether they're individually with just a couple of students around a table or there may be several. But as we've done at the elementary level with the implementation of 21st century classroom, certainly different furniture than what maybe we're accustomed to seeing in spots or in an LMC. again, just a little different look in terms of what this space would look like. Colors, I just asked the architects to add some color to add a little definition to this presentation. Those have not been determined, but you'll notice the different type of ceiling we're talking about up here. It'll be a plank type ceiling where planks might be 4 feet wide, and then it would be exposed ceiling up, painted and exposed. We have about 4 additional feet above this drop ceiling, so it would provide for a greater emphasis, greater space, sort of add a real pop to the particular area. Again, another look back from the west, looking east out into the courtyard area. And then here are bookshelves in this space here. Again, a little greater look or different look in terms of seating within the facility itself. Again, another look, and then let's see. Go ahead, Mike. That's the last one. Okay, then there's a floor plan beyond that. This would give you a little greater idea in terms of what's actually going to occur. Again, we're over here in this space. Here is most of your seating going in here. This area right here is designated as a quiet sort of reading area. We estimate seating for 8 to 10 kids in here. Back around the corner here where we have our labs now, they'll be reconstructing of those of the existing lab, and then also incorporating the special ed classrooms into the different types of lab technology. These will be individualized, or actually working spaces for up to 2 students at a time for production work. They'll be seating in here for about 15 to 20 kids. What is currently a lab where we're all working entirely with desktop computers, more mobile, more flexible type of technology, laptops, iPads, different things like that. Again, we'll be updating this area here, so there'll be some video production room. We're recommending that Frank's lab be brought up from the basement, and that be incorporated into this space here. Chris and Frank have sat in a lot of these meetings, and they feel that's the most appropriate location really for incorporating 21st century technology into the learning environment and so forth. Again, this is the demonstration lab. Notice the half moon shape will occur there. Here is a general workroom that maybe will have copiers or binding materials or whatever it may be used for. Again, the small workspaces or meeting spaces up against that wall. These areas, the 3H and 5H, those are actually heights of bookshelves that will be in here. There will be 3 or 5 shelves. A question was asked today, well, what do we envision number of books, number of copies in the library here? I think there's about 13 to 14,000 now. From what we've heard, we understand the optimum is about 10 copies per volume for every student with 1,200 kids. That means your collection should be between or around 12,000 volumes, and that's what we have intentions of maintaining it somewhere between 10 and 12,000 volumes. I guess just final thing, notice the incorporation of the courtyard and cleaning up this area here, and how everything will just blend nice and clean and sort of clean it up. We really don't envision, people have talked about what may happen with this building or this space over any years to come. You know, we sort of we feel as though the LMC is the heartbeat, the heart of a junior high school, probably an elementary school too, but certainly a junior high. And we would never envision these spaces changing, no matter what type of what would happen in this building. So my understanding is we'll have a little greater conversation during discussion. If I can answer any questions now, I'll be happy to, or Chris.
I don't know, Chris. Do you have anything you want to add further about the vision for this new space, or?
Well, an open floor, but perhaps making wax poetic about this. And I don't want to take up too much time, but just to say that, all the tenets of 21st century learning, I think, are incorporated in these plans. And we started off by saying, what were exactly the types of learning activities we would want to see in a space like this, and really what we saw was we wanted creativity, We want collaboration. We want students to be able to access problem-based learning. And this space really would, as it plans, as you can see, would really infuse that type of teaching and learning for all staff. Currently, it's pretty much just accessed by our literacy teachers, but I foresee a transformation of this scale would incorporate the whole staff and would affect the learning of you know, most, if not all of our students, certainly a large majority of our students. So I really see this as a great opportunity for our staff, for our students, for the district, and for the community, because there was talk of making this space available to the community at large during weekends, during summer hours. And I would love to see that, to have families come in here and take part of the services that, you know, are going to exist here. Mm-hmm. So I'm very optimistic about it. I think if it comes to fruition, it'll have a major impact on how services are given to kids and how teaching will be infused with technology and the types of exciting learning opportunities that, quite frankly, and you've been in the classrooms, you know, our classrooms are rigid. They're inflexible. You know, mortar and cinder blocks aren't very easily moved. So now in this space, we really have the opportunity to transform it into a vibrant learning hub, as Bob had mentioned and alluded to. And, you know, during the Hadley New Horizons discussion, the phrase change for just change's sake was mentioned. And I think that applies here, too. It's not just about transforming, just, you know, putting a lot of fancy technology and, you know, making things look different. It's really about affecting the teaching and the learning that takes place in the school for the staff at large, and not just a segment of one staff or a particular type of learning. And finally, see, I told you I would. I think, you know, if you think of libraries, school libraries as sort of the traditional mode, it's a place where kids come to access information. Now in the 21st century, we're asking kids to not only access information, but to curate it, to evaluate it, to bring their critical thinking skills to bear upon it. But also we're asking them, and the Common Core demands this, for them to take an extra step and to turn it into something else, turn it into something unique. And in that vein, this place could be a publishing forum, a place to display student work, both digitally, analog products. So really what you're talking about is a place where teaching and learning can go from the conceptual stage to where kids can see actual products in which they've created, displayed here in some format. Mm-hmm. So, please, I'll stop now.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you. We will return to this topic when we go to the discussion portion of our agenda, where the purpose of this topic on the agenda is for board's consideration to take the project to bid, which we would hope to do with your approval, then bring it back for final vetting and conversations about the project and its costs sometime in January, probably, after the bidding process is over. So we'll return to this a little bit later. And final presentation of the evening is Bob wants to, again, introduce the levy process to you. As you know, we try to give you three meetings in which to give consideration to our levy, and we will have an official discussion of the levy at our November 26th meeting with a vote on the levy at the December 10th meeting. So this is a presentation to help you begin to think about questions you may have about our levy.
So, as Ann has indicated, this is my initial, our initial presentation to the board in terms of the levy and what that may hold, but this isn't certainly that just began to occur. Over the past months and weeks, I've been in contact with the assessor's office. You know, the majority of our property, 99% of our property here is in here in Milton Township. So I have been in contact with the Milton Township assessor just to give you a little background information. He estimates new construction at something slightly under $12 million, and he's also expecting a decrease in EAV of about 6.4%. So all of our estimates will be based off a 94 or 93.6% of last year's EAV. So this is a chart that's new to the presentation. And I wanted to explain to you a little bit about the changes in EAV, CPI, and the tax rate, and how those factors all interrelate with one another. The other outside factor here, the another factor to consider is new construction, which is outside when we make these initial calculations. So, you know, I've had questions on it. I'm sure board members have had questions on it. And I know that the township assessor has had questions on it. And that is from our residents. Well, if my EAV is going down, why aren't my taxes going down? Well, the way the TTEL was created a number of years ago is sort of an inverse relationship. Now, over the past 15 years, EAV has constantly increased, which forced down the tax rate. Well, the past 4 years now, we've had exactly the opposite, and that is that with existing EAV going down, the tax rate is being forced up. So here in the first scenario, if CPI and existing EAV were both at 3%, let's say 3%, the tax rate essentially remains unchanged from the previous year. But with a decreasing EAV, tax rate goes up. Conversely, what we've had previously is existing EAV forced the tax rate down. And then again, it's based upon what the individual taxing bodies within a township or a county, what they're asking for ultimately affects where their rates are going to go. So for this presentation, we know the CPI, which was set last December, is at 3%. We know that this year it's floating right at about 2.7%. We have 2 months left to determine what that's ultimately going to look like. In terms of this levy presentation, I'm requesting an 11.71% increase. Please keep in mind that is such a great increase, such a dramatic increase, because we abated the bond and interest levy last year. And so what do I actually expect us to receive? It's about an 11.32% increase. So this is what CPI looks like over the past several years. I believe it's about 2.4% about 2.4% over the past 5 years. But they say over the long-term history of the CPI, over the past 50 years, the average yearly increase is about 2.5%. Every year I show this slide, and what we've done is we've tried to shrink the difference between what we're requesting and what we're actually going to receive. And every year we've tried to narrow that gap. This last year was a little unusual in that we came in and requested a 3.69% increase. We actually, because of the abatement, received a 4.52% less in dollars because we abated at approximately $2.8 million. And as you can see, this is the request versus the actual extensions. Every year we've closed that gap. And this year, we expect it to be about 0.39%, which represents about $150,000. In other words, we're requesting $150,000 more than what we anticipate receiving. So here is the levy, extension growth over the past several years. 2010, it was almost $8 million. Last year, it was $38.9 million after the abatement of $2.8 million, and then this year we're requesting almost $43.5 million. And again, that's an estimate. What did the tax rates look like? As you'll notice, up until 2007 here, tax rates were increasing, EAV was increasing, tax rates were decreasing. Beginning in 2008, EAV goes down, tax rates are forced up. You can see the growth in tax rates over the past 4 or 5 years. Again, this 2.994% in 2011 represented the entire operating levy. Now it's at the entire levy, including bond and interest, is about 3.56%. So what are we looking for in terms of dollars? $35.4 million in the Ed Fund, $2.9 million in the Operation and Maintenance Fund, $900,000 in the Transportation. We do not levy for life safety, IMRF, and Social Security. We have always levied individually, but now we account for them individually as a result of an audit that took place earlier this year. So we're not requesting as much in IMRF as we are in Social Security. Special Education, we always levy about $300,000. Very minimal levies in both the working cash and tort immunity. By the time the calculations are done, it's about $1,400 a year we receive there. Bond and interest, those are the payments we receive right from the county assessor's office for a total request of $43,492,000. So what are the next steps? The proposed tax increase will be posted in a local newspaper in general circulation on November 29th. The board hearing is scheduled for December 10th at 7:15, and will be, once we move through the process over the next several weeks, we'll be posting and holding that proposed tax increase at the CSO until it's adopted in December. And again, we have to file our final tax papers with the county by the last Tuesday in December. And I think that's it. So we are, we've presented this for a preliminary discussion this evening. I'm sure we're going to have additional conversation at our next meeting in late November. And then again, we'll be looking for approval with the levy at the December 10th meeting. So are there any questions that anyone may have at this time?
So, Bob, do we have a PR issue here? Because we didn't, because we abated those dollars last year, and so these numbers look, to the untrained eye, inflated?
Well, they're certainly skewed. You know, one of the sort of disappointing things is that although we did abate last year, we didn't get a lot of PR out of it. Now, I am sure that we're going to get a lot of negative press on requesting an 11.7% increase. But I'm here to make recommendations to the board, mm-hmm. and that's what I have to do.
Right. I mean, I just want to put that out on the table because when we first, we were talking about having our levy conversation, that, kind of pierced my consciousness that we're going back now to a regular levy, which includes bond and interest, and so that's going to shift, you know, the look of the numbers, although had we not abated, you know, our numbers would have been continuing to go down and close that gap as we've been, you know, working hard to do over the last few years.
If we had not abated last year, our increase would probably be right around 5%. Mm-hmm. But because we did, now we have such a dramatic increase.
Right. So I just want to get that on the table so we have some recognition of that so that the board can understand that we can ask our questions and make sure that we're, you know, conscious of the why behind it, the process. Steve, you had something?
Well, I was going to say to illustrate it in easier, probably to understand ways, is to make comparisons with other taxing districts over 2 years. You know, they've gone up 11% from 2 years ago, and you can say, but they also went up 5% over the previous year. When you add the total increases, we're still less than all those other taxing districts, because 1/10% is less than the 5, and then 10 over the 2 years. And, you know, to see that 1/10, you can't do it, but if you say, well, go look at Glombard, go look, compare to District 89, you know, they're 11% over 2 years ago, probably. And that's what you really have to show people for them to really understand it.
Mm-hmm. What it would be like if it was cumulative.
Right. That you did save money. It wasn't just made up this year by going to 11%. Mm-hmm. You didn't pay that 5% last year.
Right.
But you're still up 11% over 2 years ago and all the other taxing bodies who...
And that CPI is different, too. I mean, we're dealing with a different CPI.
Well, they've all got the same CPI.
I mean, they do,
right. But, you know, it does make a difference when I think our CPI was 1.5% last year, right. and it's 3% this year, mm-hmm. and I did use $12 million in new construction in this presentation mm-hmm. this evening.
The other thing is, could you show any effects in dollars for the TIF thing going on?
That was the question I was going to ask. How is
suppressing
right.
TIF would be. Have we seen any effects at all in that? Because their EAD is not decreased, so they haven't been able to hold it steady.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I think this is the first year that I don't anticipate seeing much of any effect of the TIF. I think, Ann, you spoke with the village manager.
I did, and I've seen any. I mean, it's very slow. So they're not seeing much of anything yet themselves. Mm-hmm. And really, they said it would take several years mm-hmm. for much to change.
Mm-hmm. So what you're really presenting to us is a levy that is normal, but looks inflated because of the difference of what we did last year in terms of abating, which was, you know, a decision the board made. I'm not going back on that saying it was a bad decision. It's that when you look at the numbers, it does cause a bit of an eye-raising.
And this is the same presentation that we gave last year. It's just that as levy conversations progressed, the board made the decision to abate towards the end of the levy discussion last year.
One further thing that we talked about in finance and we'll be bringing back to the board because of its relevance to the levy, and that is a fund balance percentage of our budget that is in reserve and in fund. And if we exceed that 25% in fund balance, we need to bring to the board our recommendations for what should we do with those additional reserves. So last year we had that conversation and the decision was to abate bond and interest. We'll be bringing forth to finance and then also share with the board at the same meeting on the 26th our priorities and recommendations for that percentage of dollars that exceeds 25%.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, just the two-year budget forecast that you gave us on the 22nd.
Sure.
These numbers are still relatively accurate based on...
Still relevant, okay. Because this, you know... As I say, I probably start working on the levy in June or July, just starting to get a feel for where those numbers are going to end up at. At this time of year, it's really just fine-tuning. In that two-year budget presentation, we designated about $2.8 million in capital project for next year, for next summer, and that's in alignment with kind of what you folks have been seeing with regards to redoing this space here. Implementation of STEM at the elementary level, painting projects that we have, some internal projects that we mm-hmm. want to do, and I don't have my list in front of me, but it's about $2.8 million in total that we kind of have on our radar right now. But I've asked the Director of Buildings and Grounds to start to create something a little more in-depth so that we may look at, in terms of fund balances in this levy, what we may do with any excess fund balances that we're currently holding.
And no other change in other state aid that stays flat?
No. You know, this year we increased state aid by $1 million because it has been understated the past couple of years because of things that we were hearing out of Springfield. So this year we raised general state aid stayed static, but we increased the categoricals by almost $1 million.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, Bob.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. We're on to the business portion of our meeting.
All right. We have some action items under the consent agenda. Are there any items that board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? No? Okay. Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes human resources, personnel report, employment recommendations, internal transfers, and resignations, which are included on the updated personnel report that was at our desk.
Motion.
Item 2, finance, facilities, and operations. Hold that thought, John. Report on shared services for outsourcing. And item 3, other matters, including board meeting minutes, October 22nd, 2012, regular meeting and closed session, and October 29th, 2012, special meeting and closed session. And finally, the application for recognition of schools. We have a motion.
Motion.
Yes. Roll call, please.
Mr. Bondrak?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Glass?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr.
Kendall?
Yes. No. Yes. Superintendent.
I'm sorry. Ms. Howard.
Did you say it to me?
No. Okay.
We're so far away from you tonight. It's hard to hear. All right, superintendent's recommendations. Establish the date and time for a truth in taxation hearing. May I have a motion to approve December 10th, 2012, 7:15 p.m. as the date and time for the truth in taxation hearing. The hearing will be held at our central services office, 793 North Main Street, Glen Ellyn, Illinois, 60137.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Discussion.
Oh, I'm sorry, discussion. That date okay for you? Thank you. Roll call.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Henry?
Yes.
Mr. Bondrian?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Item 2, Truth and Taxation Act Resolution. May I have a motion to approve the Truth and Taxation Act Resolution and to authorize and direct the Secretary of the Board of Education to publish or cause to be published the attached notice of the public hearing in accordance with the Truth and Taxation Act on November 29, 2012, in the Liberty Suburban Chicago newspaper. May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All right, roll call.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenley?
Yes.
Mr. Bondrian?
Yes.
Mr. Powell?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
I have just one quick update I'd like to share with you, and that is that CIT and LLT will hear another report from the think tank study group, work group, on Thursday of this week. Karen and members of the think tank have been doing presentations at each of the buildings. So far we've been to two buildings, and we'll complete the other two elementary buildings this week. And then I believe we're scheduled to come to Hadley to share think tank report in December, so that Hadley, just like the elementaries needed to learn about Hadley New Horizons when that was happening, we want Hadley to understand what the report from the think tank is. And so anticipating positive reception from CIT with endorsement to bring the report to the board, we plan on making that our presentation at November 26th, which will be the most current update. You have all seen the last report was in June, I believe, from Karen, giving the whole scope of key concepts and ideas that Think Tank had created at that time, and they were still under study. Since that time, they have narrowed the field significantly, and through the work of study groups and site visits, and then getting feedback from the LLT and CIT presentations, will bring a more revised report to you in at the November 26th, hopefully. That's my update.
Thank you. Enrollment report.
Well, your enrollment report is in your packet. It's pretty much the same as it always is.
And pretty much the same as it always is. There are 456 students in portable classrooms.
That's correct.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Sam, for that update.
And I know Erica mentioned this, and perhaps she was going to allude to it, but in your demographic study that you finally, my apologies, a year later, received, the continued projection that our enrollments will remain stable over the next several years. And so we really, I believe at this point, we've had 10 at least solid years of being in the range of 6,300 students to 6,600 students. So I think we're pretty stable.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, board reports, finance and facilities. Drew?
Finance committee meeting right before this board meeting. Essentially, we went through the Bob's levy presentation, which the board had already went through. The other point of issue was the 4.2 policy about fund balances, and the finance committee directed Bob to to list all of the projects that are in excess of the 25% by policy, that will be discussed at the next Finance Committee.
Okay, thank you. Sam, Policy Committee?
Excuse me.
Sorry. I did that on purpose.
Policy. I know you're all wondering what policy is doing on the agenda tonight. And the answer, is that during our last meeting, we rediscovered, came back to grips with what's called the process map, which our district has and has been in place before. And thanks to Maureen and to Ann for that, to bring it back to us. The process map basically is sets the timeline for the board or for the policy committee on an annual basis. What the goals of it really are to set a review cycle on a three-year cycle to review all policies of the board, and also to create an annual review cycle and meeting schedule in order to ensure that board policies are in legal compliance with state and federal mandates. Now, the reason for the standing agenda item is I know you all know about PRESS, which is the Policy Reference Education Subscription Service from the IASB. They provide updates to us as a member district to ensure that our policies and all member policies, our member district policies, do in fact comply with state or federal law. So we are currently reviewing Section 3 of the board policy, and I owe Erica my revisions, which I will do post haste, and we fully expect to have those reviewed and ready to start the presentation process to the board on the next policy meeting, November 30th. In terms of next steps, after the November 30th meeting, we tend to review Section 2, which is the school board section, and there are some pertinent policies that we think are important to review and have in place before the next turnover of the board.
Elections coming, yeah.
And that's it for policy.
Thank you very much. Sam, you're up again, IASB resolutions.
Shifting gears. You all have seen, as part of my duties as the IASB delegate, I have reviewed the proposed resolutions, amendments from the IASB. I have enumerated them, and you've all seen those. I haven't had any questions, save for one set of questions, I haven't had any. So what I think I'm going to do is the resolutions that I have not agreed with the resolution committee's recommendation, I'll just highlight those. So starting with resolution number 5, which is the criminal history records expansion, the Orland School District 135 has submitted a resolution that requires all school board members to undergo criminal history background, including fingerprinting, etc. The ISB committee has recommended to not adopt this resolution. However, coming from law enforcement, I've personally been fingerprinted, as a lot of people in this room have, and I really don't see a negative as to this process. Obviously, the school board is entrusted with a lot of decisions involving a lot of students. There's not a lot of student contact, but there is student contact. We make a lot of policies and a lot of decisions based on these kids, and I don't really see any intrusion, for lack of a better word, of this step being made. So, I will leave it up to the board to decide what we're going to recommend. Mm-hmm. What I would recommend voting for this resolution. So, mm-hmm. I don't know what anybody else's views are.
I'm only laughing because I'm on the other side of the constitutional muster part of it. I don't have a problem with it. I guess my only question, Sam, is there a prohibition as to anything that gets pinged on a background check? I mean, obviously, if you're a registered sex offender, I mean, God help us if we've elected you. But I guess what would be, would there be a prohibitive offense?
Well, we'd have to.
We'd have to make policy to have it be a prohibitive offense, or mm-hmm. what would ding on a background check? And then would it be once you've been elected and sworn in, then we're going to do a background check, or is this prior to an election?
As a part of the process.
Yeah. The process has not been determined, and I don't think the school district contemplated that.
Okay.
I think they're looking for the broad.
It's not that I'm opposed to background checks. I just, from my constitutional perspective, you don't just do random background checks without anything to them if there's no. Mm-hmm.
Well,
you got to have a there's got to be something more to it.
But the more to it is, it's not actually random. It's serving an elected position in school district.
You'd probably use the same applicable law to employees if you were going to do something like that. New employees.
You're almost looking like you're an employee. I mean, substitute teachers have to be fingerprinted. Mm-hmm.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying I'm opposed to it. I just, there has to be a policy behind doing it and we'd have to put it in place right away.
Right. Is there an objection to Sam voting yes on this particular proposition?
No. And Sam, when you get to the resolutions meeting and you hear, when Orland comes up to present this, they will fill in some of the blanks.
You would think.
Yeah. So you can. I trust you to listen to that, and if you have any concerns at that point, to go with, what you think we should do.
Yeah. I fall on what Tara and Sam. Kind of against it, because it'd be the only elected member position in the state to have to undergo this. I don't know. And it doesn't say what is allowed and what is not allowed. Mm-hmm. So I think there's too much ambiguity.
Maybe he listened for that at the resolutions meeting.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. So moving along, resolution number 9, pension reform constitutionality. That is Sherrard Unit School District 200 that wants to require the IASB to only support pension reform measures that pass constitutional muster. The committee says no, that we should not add that extra requirement. In the notes of the committee, it says reluctantly, it was the consensus of the committee to withhold support for this resolution. And I agree with that reluctance in that some of their rationale is that it says it's impossible to determine constitutionality of proposed legislation before it actually has been implemented, and I don't agree with that. Again, my legal background tells me that the prior precedent can easily be examined. Attorneys can look at these things and come down pretty close to what is constitutional and what isn't before you need to go past the initial stages. So I would support this resolution only that or one of the reasons is because if you try to do all these things it turns out to be unconstitutional all the way at the end of the stage, it just adds another step to the process, which I think is unnecessary. So I am saying yes. The mm-hmm. resolution committee is saying no. Anybody have any questions, comments, reasons?
Did it, in reading it, in your read of it, is the no, the recommended no, because it has to do with pension reform and that is still up in the air?
No.
So it's not anything to do with that?
No. In my reading of it, the no is a hesitant no. Mm-hmm. And the hesitant no is that I'm not sure who makes up this committee, but maybe there isn't much legal background there, and they don't realize that it's not as difficult as it may seem to determine constitutionality to a certain extent.
Okay. No, I'm going to trust your judgment on that, Sam.
Okay, thank you. Last one is the homeless student transportation resolution is submitted by Aurora West School District 129, and they want the ISB to support legislation that requires Illinois law to conform with federal law. And on its surface, it seems like a slam dunk. We should go along with that. My reason, and Eric and I talked about this a little bit, my reason for voting against this is a little technical, really. Just as a little background, the responsibility regarding homeless education falls under the Education for Homeless Children Act, which is the Illinois law, and the Federal McKinney-Vento Act. And the general rule is requiring transportation of homeless students. Homeless students will have the same transportation opportunities provided as a regular resident student. And I know our administration knows this and deals with this on a daily basis. The Illinois law goes a little further than the federal law in that if students' living arrangements terminate in the school district of origin, the student is living in another district, and the student is still attending the school of origin. So in other words, if we had a student here who became homeless, moved to another district, but still attended school here, that's our scenario here. The districts, meaning the new district of residence and the district of origin, are required to meet and apportion responsibility and cost for providing the transportation. So in other words, they split the cost or they proportion it somehow. If we decide to eliminate the Illinois law and go with the federal law, that provision no longer exists. So there's the danger that the district that houses the student would have to pay the entire cost. Or not. We don't know that. It's not clear in this. Mm-hmm. But my reading of it is that it raises a danger which isn't necessarily or should really be required. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm voting no. Or that's why I'm recommending no. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm. And this was confusing. I had to read it half a dozen times before I figured out what they're saying. I think they're saying Illinois law goes too far, so if you vote that you should conform to federal, then that would pull back. That's what I think. So help me understand why that's not a good thing.
Well, they're saying it goes too far and that it adds another step, and then the next step is that it requires the housing district and the district of where the student actually goes to school to sit down and talk about costs and appropriate costs. That's the added step,
but I think
in my reading.
But I think what they're saying is that Illinois law says to do that, and if the resolution is Illinois follow federal law, I think it would take that back.
It would definitely take it back.
But that,
so what's the downside to the district? Is that what you're asking?
Well, that's what I think. Then that's what I think the committee is. That's why they're saying they support it.
The question is: does the federal law mandate transportation costs? Where Illinois does, you have to split those costs between the two districts. Mm-hmm. And I'm not clear on whether the federal law also requires transportation as well.
And I don't know either, and it's not.
But we could get we can get that answer to you before you take a vote on this. Because if the less demanding law is the federal law, which says if you're homeless, you'd lose that ability to be transported, then it would reduce the cost if you followed the federal law.
Right.
But if what Sam's saying is that then it falls on the burden of the district where the child determines he or she wants to attend, the burden wouldn't be shared. So we'll clarify that for you, okay? Then at least you'll have at least the money answer.
But the law says that the district that the child is attending, when they become homeless or they have to move or whatever, they remain in the district
if they choose,
in order to create continuity. Mm-hmm. That was the intention of the law.
And that's true of both the federal and the state.
Okay, so that's the same. All right. Well, thank you, Sam, very much. We appreciate your work.
Good job. Yeah, thank you.
You got your pin this year again.
All right.
I just had one quick comment. that was actually in an email, and it's a reminder for those of us who are attending the conference that the Alliance legislative report that Ben Schwarm sends from IASB also has a whole series of panels with the executive director of IASA. He's on a panel, and then a lot of our legislators around behind the scenes in pension reform, legislative issues impacting school districts in the coming year, an overview of the legislative session for 2013, which I don't know that they did this in this kind of earnest approach last year. I don't remember seeing a lot of these. I think they were built into like a round table, but seemed pretty interesting, especially with pension reform being up in the air. So I just want to make a mention that that was on an email in case people didn't have a chance to look at it yet. And as we always do, if you can look at the conference, the sessions that you may want to go to, then we can kind of divide and conquer and bring back handouts, et cetera, from the different ones.
We also have some of our own district presenters presenting.
Saturday at 3 o'clock, we'll be talking about...
Round table.
Well, 1 o'clock is the round table with Hadley and the PLC schedule, and at 3 o'clock will be a group of us presenting 21st century learning in 20th century facilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is exciting because we didn't get selected last year, which we were upset about, so I'm glad that they had the good judgment to accept our good work this year, so that's a great thing. Thank you to all who put the proposal together.
Are we going to have that videotaped?
I doubt that.
All right, thanks. Any other board reports? All right, thank you very much. On to discussion.
Several discussion items this evening. The first relates to the reorganization of our pay structure for our lunchroom playground supervisors. Lori has put together a very comprehensive board report for you that outlines both the history of the dilemma and the challenge that we've had with our supervisors and our proposal to create a more equitable and consistent pay structure. And so you have lots of information there. I'm going to turn this over to Lori to answer any questions that you may have specifically. We have received some questions from board members. Sam, John, Dan, I believe you raised some questions before at Finance. And so I don't know if any of you want to re-raise those, or Lori can summarize them for you.
Either way.
Okay. There were some questions about the discrepancy in the hours worked at the different schools, because part of what we're trying to do, as you know, is to create a consistent and a more equitable pay structure, moving from a daily pay structure to an hourly pay structure. And some of the reasons behind the differences between the length of the lunch period in our different schools have to do with playground issues, space and scheduling into the gyms, and just the size of the building. And Churchill has experimented and played around with a number of different configurations based on the different number of sections that they've had and issues on the playground, working to address those issues. So Churchill and Franklin and Forest Glen, Churchill and Franklin both have longer lunch periods, and then Forest Glen and Lincoln have a shorter lunch period. And by lunch period, I don't mean for the children, I mean the amount of time when lunch is taking place during the school day. Mm-hmm. So that was some of the questions that was asked. Another question came up about is they're the same job description for each of these positions in all the schools, and the answer is yes. So the same job description for any custodial maintenance workers who are on staff at that time. And the answer to that question is also yes. And why the change now? We noticed the inequity and felt that we needed to address it.
We also were advised to move away from a session compensation model to an hourly rate based on labor law.
Mm-hmm. And that's the FLSA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea to go to the hourly because of the discrepancies between the amount of time on here. I had raised that Finance, just the hourly rate. Just had some questions about that, just comparing it to other hourly positions. I was falling on the high side, looking at local comparable school districts. Now, I understand, yeah, these people only come in for that job, so you also have to entice them. I struggle a little bit with the hourly rate, but mm-hmm. I understand, but I still struggle.
Mm-hmm. We did too, Dan. We just felt that we had to land where we landed from the standpoint of what people were already experiencing.
So Churchill has lunch between 10:30 and 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So some kids are eating lunch at 10:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. They're getting used to it for high school.
Yeah. Why is that? Is this because there's too many kids and not enough space?
There's the playground space, the actual space for the students to eat and then go outside to play is very limited. The playground area at Churchill is very small.
Like the blacktop mm-hmm. area versus the...
Yeah, not the large
wet.
Water retention area.
Swampy space.
Yeah, where they're not allowed to go.
Just anecdotally, I had a couple of conversations with some lunch ladies, for lack of a better term, at Lincoln, and their issue wasn't the rate of pay or how long they had to be there. Their issues were with their duties versus the janitorial staff's duties. Mm. And the perceived, if not real, differences between the duties of one school's lunch lady staff versus another school's lunch lady staff.
Hmm.
So specifically...
Supervision, you mean the supervisors.
Right.
Yeah.
Not the...
Playground supervisors.
Exactly right. Like, for example, who puts out the tables, mm-hmm. who puts them away, who sweeps, who mops... Yeah, some apparently.
Are you telling me? I mean, are they not the same in every building?
They're not.
Mm-hmm. Based on the job descriptions, they should be.
Well, I think that's maybe a mm-hmm. deeper issue mm-hmm. other than this, but that's from the feedback I got. That was more of an issue than mm-hmm. this money and this discrepancy of pay.
I appreciate you raising that, Sam. Obviously, that's not part of this recommendation, but something right. we should look at. In terms of...
Well, that's an example where if that were the case at Lincoln, that's maybe why it's 20 minutes longer.
Probably right. It could be the same way with all the schools. Probably say Hadley. I don't know about Hadley, but...
Hadley's a very different situation.
Right. So it could drop the time in the elementary schools.
It may have to do with the schedules at each of the schools, too, and how closely they need that space. You know, if they don't have... a space for gym.
Right, I understand.
Lincoln doesn't.
And
Lincoln doesn't, right.
Lincoln has the least, Lincoln and Forest Glen have the least amount of space because you don't have the large gyms, so that students have to go immediately from lunch into PE.
And as Dan kind of said, I understand that. I think it's a good idea to go from a daily rate of pay to an hourly rate of pay, but the problem is, what's that rate, and what effect is it going to have on our other hourly employees, and what are they going to...
We don't anticipate an effect on other hourly employees.
I mean, not a direct effect, but future negotiations, and the lunch ladies are paid 20 an hour, what are we going to get?
Different
The original pay was really based on a session which wasn't ever intended to be 2 3/4 hours. So their rate of pay has always been in that perception of an hour mm-hmm. or a little over an hour. So we've never encountered conversations relative to that with our employee groups.
Mm-hmm. So it's not been an issue that you've...
No, and also, I mean, one big difference is benefits. This particular position has no benefits.
Right.
Which is different than our full-time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think you said these are not existing staff people. These are people that come in to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
And this is maybe anecdotal to this, but Sam and I chatted a little bit about this on the phone today. And this is this one time in the day for our elementary kids, especially, where they have downtime. And the role of that lunch supervisor has, I think, an effect on
the morale in the lunchroom, the kind of that space that they're in, the attitude. And I think it takes a special person to do this job, having sat through some lunches over time. And recently going to Churchill to test out the hot lunch program and seeing how they work with the younger kids and the older kids. You know, there's that piece to it, too, which is hard to quantify.
Mm-hmm. So, I would agree with
you.
I guess I struggled with this on a couple of fronts. Just the way it was written up, I felt like we were chasing a problem that wasn't there. In other words, you know, I didn't see anything that said, you know, people are think it's not fair. People have come to us and said, you know, hey, I'm underpaid. These guys aren't paid. So, you know, I just felt, you know, were we creating a problem that wasn't there? I didn't know if maybe we're violating some labor laws by doing this, that at that case, then we need to do something about it. So that was another one for me. And it's just, when you look at the data, it just seems all reversed, right? It seems like Churchill only has four people. They have the least amount of people. And Hadley has three, where you'd think there'd be a need for more people because it's extended period of time and bigger numbers. And then Franklin's got like nine, which is completely
maybe that's why it only
the outlier of the, you know,
that,
the teachers.
That's this is not including teachers. We actually have had several complaints. This is a problem we've been grappling with for longer than the month that we've been bringing it to you. We've talked it over with our principals. We've tried to find other ways. We have had significant complaints. In fact, even as early as today, Lori received a call wanting to know would the board be taking action tonight on this matter. So we don't share that in the report with you, that this comes from a background of complaint of inequity among our schools.
I guess, you know, for me, I mean, it's a, you know, it's a $25,000 cost. I don't know if, again, just not knowing any history here, I don't know if Franklin has just said, oh, let's load up as many people and because they need teachers to have more time off to do something else, or if it's a real need.
It's just a different structure, Lori.
And what's not factored in here that you can't see are the number of our current staff who are working lunch as part of their regular work day but don't get paid this amount. So, for example, an aide has a 30-minute lunch break, but then they also have another 30 minutes where they do duty outside. It's considered part of their regular work day. What you don't see in here is also teachers who may be working in the lunchroom. In certain schools, have more teachers working in the lunchroom than not working in the lunchroom. So it's just taking that certain piece. We've looked at our staffing to make sure that our ratios, our student-to-staff allocations are equal, and those are in terms of 1 to 50. We want one staff for 50 kids out in the playground or out in the lunchroom for this time period. And the way Franklin has theirs scheduled is they've got five and then four. So five for the first hour and four for the second hour, whereas Churchill, they've got four people who are working that entire time.
So it's two, it's separate sets of people.
It's two shifts.
Two shifts, okay.
Okay, because here it says 60 minutes.
Right, that's how long that's how long your session is, what they consider to be a session at Franklin. So that's part of the inequity.
So lunch at Franklin is really served over
2 1-hour sessions at Franklin? Mm-hmm.
It's really served over 2 hours.
Yeah, they have more than one lunch period.
Right. So now the data to me doesn't make sense. So how long is lunch time at Franklin? Is it 60 minutes or 120 minutes?
John, I had the same question because I looked at it and I'm like, I know it's not.
Lunch is 50 minutes for
no,
kids.
No, the time that we're cut, that we need an employee or whatever this person is to be there for lunch at Franklin is 120 minutes or 60 minutes?
120 minutes.
Okay, and what is it for Lincoln?
For Lincoln?
It says 80 minutes here, but
it's 50 minutes, but then there's setup and cleanup time needed.
So is it 80 minutes or 50?
It's a 50 minutes for the kids, 80 minutes of work time.
Okay, but so Franklin says 60 minutes, Lori, and I think that's where John...
Right, so it's 120 for Franklin, it's 80 for Lincoln. Are all the others right? 160, 80, and 135?
Tell me where you're looking at,
John.
So Lori, the table that has the table under the first table, you know, the second table on that page where it says the daily minutes of work time, daily hours of work time.
Right.
Okay,
so
that's
the first page of your report.
Yep.
So when we look at it, what I think John is asking is it says it says 60 minutes of work time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But is the lunch period, you're saying that by
So the lunch period is 50 minutes, and because you have two shifts at Franklin, you've got 10 minutes of setup at Franklin, whereas you have 15 at Lincoln. So you have 5 minutes difference there.
Okay.
And then the second shift that comes into Franklin has the 10 minutes at the end of the period.
Got it.
Whereas there's only one period at Lincoln, and so the person does the cleanup, the setup, and the cleanup.
So if I'm working Franklin, mm-hmm. I only work one shift, or can I work two shifts?
Well, the way they've structured it and hired, you only work one shift. That's why they have nine, and the other schools have.
So if I work two shifts, which you're saying I can't do, I wouldn't get $50.
And currently, you would get just the 25.
We don't have anybody working two shifts.
But we do at Churchill.
So Franklin has somehow worked it where they get twice as many people to get the hourly.
Mm-hmm. Or the session. And that's their, I mean, every school is different.
Yeah,
every school is different in terms of.
That's how they figured it out.
Well, and how they.
So Lincoln only has one shift?
Correct.
Yeah.
And Forest Glen.
Churchill has three shifts?
Correct.
So is it the same in Churchill, or are these four people getting $75 because they're working three shifts?
They're getting $25.20.
For all three shifts.
That's correct. That's where the inequity comes.
Mm-hmm. And then Forest Glen is one shift,
mm-hmm.
and Hadley is?
Three lunch periods. I mean, it goes from, I don't know what the lunch.
Hadley goes from 10:45 to 1 with their lunchtime. The same people work in.
Yeah, the whole time.
And they have staff members.
One shift.
Mm-hmm. And they have staff members, too.
So, I mean, I understand why a rate would be what it is if you're coming in and you're working 1 hour, right?
Mm-hmm.
People come in, I don't know, I guess now you have people that could potentially work three shifts, right? So they're making the $60 for the three shifts. I don't know, and then we're adding $25,000 worth of cost. It just seemed to me, I don't know, just didn't feel right to me. I guess I would maybe recommend that there's a minimum of, you know, $20 or $25 for a shift, but if you work more, there's an hourly rate that's probably more aligned with what, you know, what we're paying the district, which would be like $11 or $12 or whatever, but something more aligned with an hourly rate.
We're paying in the district for what? What's it
for this type of service? Mm-hmm. I mean, are we paying? I mean, when you look here and we're paying, you know, $11 an hour for a special education ed, you know, there are all kinds of
they have benefits though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a. I mean, from what Lori said, there's several factors that go into this. I mean, John, I think your line of questioning is important because mm-hmm. it helped to clarify, and it goes back to, and I'm glad that you mentioned this, Anne, the fact that you have had. Concerns about this over time, which is why you tackled it and approached it this way. So this is, I understand what you're saying, John. The way I read this is an apples and oranges compared to other positions, and there's unique, just like with those with AIDS, unique qualifications. There's some unique needs in this as well. So the question is, you know, we hear the recommendation, we're understanding. You know, Dan, sounds like during finance you asked your questions and have had them answered. And Lori, what you're recommending is the best solution currently in order to get this dealt with this year.
I have a question, though. My question, though, is more that is there a way to make the way these are... Okay, I'm not sure how to say this. Make it more consistent because I'm listening to where this conversation is, and I, on one hand, I'm like, okay, this is our lunchroom supervisors. I don't think we need to have this much discussion over $25 an hour lunchroom supervisors. However, from a consistency standpoint and seeing how that this works, and I happened to be at Lincoln School like a week and a half ago and actually in their lunchroom, so I saw what I think Sam is talking about, mm-hmm. it's inconsistent across the schools. Now, I understand that our students.
What's inconsistent?
Yeah. The hours or the.
The job description.
Well, the
duty.
I mean, the duty. Like,
what they physically
like
do.
That. And, I'm, and if I'm wrong, I'm just on the surface, this is what it appears to be. Mm-hmm. You know, Ben Franklin has 9 supervisors because they work. You have two groups of split shifts. So you have 9 people, where at other schools you have more people or fewer people working longer shifts. And clearly, you know, like
you'd like to see that piece of this change so that everybody's working, everybody can only work one shift?
No, I don't care if they work one shift. It would seem like it would be more equitable if it was the same across the board. If at Ben Franklin there really are 2 shifts of workers, why are there 2 shifts? Shouldn't there just be 1 shift? Why is it that there are only 1 shift, like at Churchill, where somebody works, you know, that whole time? And again, this to me, that's why I'm saying this is a level of discussion
that's a school-based decision. I mean,
we wouldn't make that decision.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't even be made at Lori's level. It's the principal working with their staff.
What they need.
And figuring out what they need.
And who they can get.
Yeah, and Susie working the first shift at Ben Franklin may say, I don't want to stay here for another hour. I'm out of here. So if you want me to work, I'll work 1 shift. I'm done.
But, I agree, and I'm not, it's not so, I'm not trying to get into the everyday business of how it's run, but that's to me is where the inequity is, and that's why this is being brought to us, because the way it works at one school is creating such an inequity at another school, and they're getting paid the same amount of money. To me, it would be like
which is
what this is trying to address.
Right.
But I don't know, does it necessarily address that?
It does from a standpoint of compensation.
Right. Okay. But not now, what Sam you
what
brought
Sam's
up, which
right.
is a different issue.
Which is a different issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Let's table that and
we'll explore.
Yeah, explore.
Right. Yeah. Before we make a decision, I want that issue resolved. So it's more.
Well, we won't probably be able to resolve that issue in 2 weeks because we need to uncover the issue and we need to know what the barriers are to whatever is occurring at each of those buildings. You know, that you've got some barriers at 2 of our buildings from a facility perspective that makes the situation different. Now, how we'll resolve that, you know, I think we have to talk with all those people involved, and I'm not sure if our feeling is we need to do something here because people are asking about compensation.
Yeah.
And we'd like to be able to resolve it as soon as possible so that we can begin compensating in an equitable way for the work that people are doing.
And I think that's the right thing to do. I mean, please don't misunderstand me. They should all be paid the same amount of they should. That's the way it should be. And you're right, Erica. It takes a special kind of person to do this. But there seems to be a little bit more behind it. And
yeah, but I struggle with if I work 3 shifts at Churchill, right, and so under this scenario, I get $60 for 2.5 hours, and what do we pay our substitute teachers that work the whole day?
$95.
I mean, I don't know. There's something about that.
Okay, well, I
appreciate what you're saying, John. I think, in this case, my position is to defer to the Director of Human Resources, who's, you know, talked to the people, done the homework, and is recommending to us this is what we need to do at this moment in order to correct this equity issue. There's another issue that's been uncovered. The administration is telling us that they will look into that. I trust that. I think, you know, that question is certainly a fair question, but not going to get resolved tonight. And what you're asking us is to focus on this recommendation.
Well, and I think what we've heard is that there are some concerns about the rate of pay and whether you can support that rate of pay. And there's confusion about whether or not everybody should be doing the same, only working the same amount of hours at each of those buildings, and then what is the quality of the work, or what is the expectation of work that they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And I guess I am just throwing out the idea of, you know, it's been a flat rate job, but maybe it's a flat rate if you work a shift, and then if you work longer than a shift. There's an opportunity to make more money, but it's not at $20 an hour.
25.
That's the idea of the program.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you, Lori.
Next item for discussion is the administrative computer refresh, and you have Mike's report that outlines what he hopes to replace for the administrators in the district, which would include CSO in all of our buildings, and that they have not been refreshed for quite some time and have never been on a cycle, and so this will allow us to do a replacement and then get people in the administrative work on a cycle. So, Mike, anything more you'd like to add or questions?
Oh, it's pretty much the last collection of devices that we really never had on a refresh cycle. This would kind of tie them in with the grade school refresh that we just completed this past year. And like I said, get our administrators on a regular refresh cycle like everybody else. So their equipment isn't so haphazard. It also makes them more flexible and mobile. With some newer, lighter technology, so in the classrooms they can bring these to them and still be nimble enough to get around and do the work, as well as being powerful enough to do the desktop work from there on.
And basically, if I understand this, it's all laptop, right?
Right.
So what OS?
What operating system?
These will be Windows 7. Anything new that we're rolling out will be Windows 7. It's in anticipation of planning our rollout for this coming summer.
So three quick questions. How old are they? The existing computers, how old are they?
It depends on the administrator. Some of them have laptops that are 6-7 years old. The desktops are a minimum of 5. And all of those machines have already been refreshed at the classroom level. So basically, they've always had whatever desktop model that you did for a refresh, say, at the grade school or at the junior high. And laptops have always been sort of a haphazard as the administrators have come in and come over and left, or as the machine had failed and you replace them. So it's on a more systemic level.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned extensive testing on each different model. Can you talk just a little bit about that?
Well, this is the one I've been using for the last several months, so I figured anything that I'm going to throw at it, and it can handle the administrator's role as well. So particularly things like Office, any kind of spreadsheet work, multitasking, depending on how many windows I may have open at any given time, presentations I've done with these, to see if they can handle the resolution of projectors, those sorts of things. Just day-to-day work that I know that I do, and I also know my fellow administrators do.
The portability issue, do you envision the administrators taking the computers off-site, different rooms, et cetera? Is that the purpose of
so?
Evaluations for teachers, for principals to be able to use, go paperless?
Right, and so as we're having our administrative meetings and we're collecting as a group, it's a way for us to continue to move more towards a more paperless solution. So all of our agendas are online currently. All of the notes that we take for these meetings will be online. Pretty much everything that we do at any one of our administrative meetings can be done all electronically.
Sorry, one more. You came up with the number 20. Why 20?
Well, that's the number of administrators we have at CSO, plus our APs in the buildings and our principals in the buildings. So it's anybody that is an administrator in the district, and that's where I arrived at that number. And those are the people that generally are kind of underserved when it comes to technology. Mm-hmm.
What's being done with their old laptop?
Some of them have been repurposed. We roll them into the classrooms, but most of the ones that the administrators currently have are so old that there's not much we can do with them anymore. They either go to disposal or they'll go to they'll donate those to the resource center. But, or we use them for parts in some cases, in most cases.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions for Mike?
It's a good thing.
Final discussion item for the evening is the LMC remodeling project, and just a summer project update that puts some context around the whole under that other information so that the, you know, you see the whole picture. You've seen the presentation. We've had several discussions at finance about this, and we hope to bring this back for action on November 26th to go out to bid.
So the construction cost, $850,000. The number seems high to me, but you know, I'm a novice, obviously. So is there a lot of extensive, you know, this is the footprint here. So is there going to be a lot of walls moving? Why so much?
What you're seeing now, everything will be completely stripped out, ceilings, floors, wall to wall. Some of the walls back in this area will be removed, like the labs and so forth, and special ed rooms. This technology or checkout space will be different than what it currently is. The front entranceway will be moved from here down to the end of the hallway, or to the center of the hallway. Everything will be redone. You're talking about a much different type of interior with movable glass doors or frames. Everything will be set in glass for sight lines, for just the way the space looks. It'll be completely different than what it looks like now. And
this is just a bid, too. So
I was going to say, this is just our estimate. So we're not going to put these dollar amounts in here. We're just going to put a bid packet together. Mm-hmm. And then
Well, they'll be correct. Sealed bids by vendors as to who we're looking thinks for, they can do it at a certain price.
We're looking for authority to go out to bid. We've been, to be honest with you, the only way we could keep up with this project was to operate in parallel. So the architects have begun to develop bid documents. Otherwise, we'd never be able to get this thing done in a timely fashion. So we're looking for discussion here, for authority to go out to bid. November 26th, the next board meeting, is when we would like to make the decision that, yes, we'll go out to bid for this project. And it's anticipated that this project will probably take more than just the 8 weeks or 9 weeks that we have in the summer. It may bleed into the springtime or into the fall time, depending upon how we can get this whole thing put together. There's a lot of casework, a lot of highly specialized items that would have to be specially made in order, particular for this project. It's just not like going out and picking it up off the shelf or something.
So orientation-wise, the courtyard is right here.
Right behind you. Okay. Courtyard is behind you. I'll just walk around the room here. This wall here will have three small groups, meeting spaces. Encased in glass, the kids will have spaces in there. There'll be three of them for 8 to 10 kids. The hallway, the new entranceway, you move from here, and it will align with the center hallway as you come down, sort of the administrator wing, or you know, by the gyms there. Behind us here, those rooms will come out, and it'll be opened up all the way back to those walls, except for what we call a demonstration area, which will have seating for approximately 30 kids, be seated in two different levels for a demonstration area. Following around where there's two current special education rooms, that area will be taken out, as well as the existing lab, made into a larger two different types of labs in there. Then you're going to come around in this area here, and from here over to that first pier will be a silent reading area, seating for about 8, 10, 12 kids in there, where kids that might need some quiet time, I don't know about quiet time, but a space where they can concentrate and read whatever they need to read or focus on, they'll be given that. Again, this will all be done in glass, movable glass partitions, glass walls, maintain sight lines, visibility, a whole different look to this area than really we've ever had. I talked earlier about we're going to maintain the glass in these frames right now, but it'll be redesigned more up-to-date, probably done more of a stainless steel look with glass doors in here, and then all new wall covers. New floor. Right now we have drop lines for electric that come in from the ceiling and down. Those lines will be run directly through the concrete. So there'll be cuttings made there. Ceiling is not going to be in this type of presentation. It'll be probably done in planks, maybe 4-foot planks with the other next 4-foot space opened up, so you'll see an exposed ceiling.
So there won't be any sound issues there?
We don't expect any. Ann asked that question last week, and I went directly to the architects, and they said, if anything, they expect the sound to be improved in this space. First of all, we still have carpeting, which will help absorb some sound, but you'll also have these varying heights within the ceiling. You'll have planks as well as exposed ceilings, so the acoustical...
Capture some of the sound in this.
Yeah, be captured and so forth. You won't find it so reverberating.
You probably already answered this in the prior presentation, but as I was looking at these pictures, I wondered where all the books were going to be.
Those are all marked either 3H or 5H. The current collection is around 13 or 14,000 volumes, I believe. We're looking to weed that back to somewhere between 10 and 12,000, probably around 12,000 volumes. They will all be put on movable carts, if you will. They're either 3 or 5 stacks high. Everything in this space will be flexible. We anticipate being able to move everything out, move everything to the side for meeting space, for a variety of different learning environments, for just to provide for as much flexibility as we possibly can that does not exist currently.
And in these drawings, the shells are in the dark blue, deeper blue.
Mm-hmm. Dark blue, yeah. There'll be some back here in this space that's designated for small meeting space, some in the quiet reading areas, and they'll be spread throughout the space itself. Again, all on wheels to make them more flexible.
This is obviously a great project, and it will benefit children quite a bit. The only thing I'd really struggle with is, our long-range facility plan calls for another building, and if that somehow happens, then we've got a massive redone LLC for another elementary school. So I sort of struggle with the inequity in that, but I do understand that we have to deal with what we have, and we have to progress with what we need to do.
Well, that's one of the reasons we would want to build this as a flexible space. If this building became something else, this could be a portion of it could be a media library media center. A portion of it could be a professional development center. I mean, you're creating a space that has tremendous flexibility and diversity of use. So take it long into the future. Even if you repurpose this building for other things, we think this space would be a fabulous space.
Bob, you walked Drew and I around earlier. Thank you. But I had a couple questions. We had kind of talked a little bit about that. I think it was Frank, you said, would come up here.
I'm sorry, what?
You said Frank would come up here.
Right.
Not to interrupt you, but for those of us who don't know Frank, who is Frank and what does he do? Why is he coming up out of the basement?
He's coming up out of the basement. Frank is the art tech teacher here, and he has a lab in the basement where he has his classes, and that class really began with a much different type of technology and much different room setup. And so bringing him up here would mesh very well with making some changes to the computer lab so that you were introducing greater media production and that sort of thing.
All the artwork that you see as you walk through the doors, all the kids' faces, mm-hmm. all of those are things that are usually created in Mr. T's class or Miss Lewis as well. But those are the types of things that they do in there. And if you ever get a chance to go in there before your kids get here, there have been some changes that have been made to it. It's literally in the basement. I mean, it's a hub of so many kids go through that class. It would be nice to have them in an area that.
And so my question was, what would happen? Are we going to bring shop back down there?
Well, we would. We've got two special education rooms that we would. So we'd repurpose that room. Perhaps another classroom would move down there, and the two special education spaces would take over another location in the building. It'll become classroom.
Yeah, but so the you're talking about the special ed classroom back here that would be moved.
Those classes would have to be relocated.
Mm-hmm. Do we know where?
Not at this point, we don't. I mean, we would be looking at the whole utilization of the building.
That's why we would want to repurpose what is currently Frank's room downstairs.
Mm-hmm. So you probably do a ship somebody down there, mm-hmm. and special ed would take over.
We'll have to use the space, yeah.
We'll use the space.
Well, when you did your presentation, I'm sorry, Dan, did you have another question?
I did.
Go ahead, John.
Are you guys done down here? I can't hear, so.
Dan, are you done? Then go to John. Go ahead.
I'll say part two.
Or shave it.
I mean, it's definitely a cool little nugget about it. I want to step back for a moment. Today, how is this room used today? I mean, kids are in classrooms all day, right? What are they coming here for today? Is it a teacher brings a class in here? Well, what happens today in this space?
I guess I
Chris, would say Chris. Chris, come on back.
Okay. Currently, what you'll see happening here is, yes, teachers bringing their classrooms here to access the computer labs.
You probably want to come up a little
closer. Oh, I'm sure. Sorry. You guys are working late.
Still early.
This is early.
You'll have teachers come in and access the computer labs, but that will actually be something that's going to be reworked as more mobile technology takes place in the classroom. So when they do that, they're really doing sort of your lower level computing, word processing, internet searching, which will be able to take place now with more mobile technology. Aside from that, you have literacy teachers coming in for book checkouts. And that's pretty much the limitations of the content area teachers coming in. So it's mostly utilized by literacy teachers.
So do teachers bring their classroom in and work on a project? Because when I look at this room, I see it as great space to use. And I'd like to see it in the classroom, but are we going to change the behavior of teachers where they're going to bring in a classroom and use some of these tables?
I think that's the hope. I mean, currently, I wouldn't say that that's the norm. I would say that that's,
that's the expectation.
When that happens, it's really...
Because, I mean, we have a workspace here today, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if I were a teacher, I could bring in the classroom and sit. I could organize these desks and sit around and do work.
You could, and when you're talking about that sort of teaching pedagogy and the types of activities that are happening in our classroom, I think what you'll see once teachers are afforded a space that they can do some more of the creative types of things that they're limited to doing now. They can do some of the problem-based learning. Some of the 21st century things that we're initiating in the grade schools, I think you'll find that teachers are going to utilize this space for those purposes. Whereas now, the rigidness of their classrooms doesn't allow them to do that. So I think what we're hoping for and what will be realized is that teaching will change as a result of having a dynamic space in which to do it.
I guess for me, I like the space, I like the idea. Few things I'm struggling with, it just seems like a lot of 850 to sort of redo this. And I'm okay with going out to bid. I'm just wondering, and I don't know how other people feel about the price tag, but I'm just wondering if, you know, we should go out to bid with maybe this design, but then, you know, what if we left the entrance there and we didn't create a whole new entrance over there? You know, we didn't reframe and raise the ceiling, and you know, I don't understand how the cost comes out. But you're doing things in parallel, right? So,
right.
You know, if this bid goes out and it turns out, you know, raising the ceiling is $200,000, we might say, well, gee, we don't want to do that. I don't know how it works, but it just seems to be in parallel. If we're going to do this, you know, do we have to move the entrance? Do we have to raise the ceilings? Do we have to, you know, re-put this in aluminum? I mean, it looks fine to me, but it's because I'm not wearing my glasses. you know, that's just a thought about how we take this out. And the other thing is that there's a lot of glass, which, you know, that's cool and all that, and I just don't know if that just becomes a little disruptive when I've got a demo going on in the glass room. I've got these glass conference rooms, and you know, everyone's just kind of checking everything out.
Well,
as opposed to the way it is now. I mean, well, it's not used.
Well, one of the...
So if you're going to use it, it'd be nice to do it in a way that...
One of the reasons for the glass is, and I think Bob or Chris mentioned line of sight, you know, so part of the vision is that students are coming in here and they're not all working as a full class all the time, that they're working as collaborative teams or they're doing different things around different projects. And so you need to have, you know, that ability to supervise students doing multiple things in a space. And so that's part of the reason for that glass.
Well, is this room staffed differently? So today, this room is staffed with what, two people?
Well, Chris and two assistants.
And is that the vision moving forward, that it would be staffed with that, or would it be staffed with four people because we've got a demo room and, you know,
Same. I mean, but we would, if, you know, one piece of the vision might be that there will always be adults in here with students, but you may see students coming down much more flexibly than you currently see them. In other words, I'm doing something in a classroom, but, you know, I really need to get down into the learning center because I need to access some things differently, or we need to spread out what we're doing in a different space. And so four or five kids are going to come down to the learning center to work, and the rest of the class is up there, but they'll be kind of the generic supervision because there are other adults down here. And so you see the supervision of several adults, but they're not statically assigned to this library besides Chris.
Yeah, it just seems that if we're not using it today in that way, and then we're bringing in a group here, group here, group here, group here, we might need a little more supervision. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
But, you know, John, you start out with your comment by saying, let's take a step back. So that was part of my thought, too. And there were two things. Ann alluded to this, but the CASARTA update I thought was kind of interesting, just from a sheer number. And it, essentially what the takeaway was, although it's hard to go out 7 years, but what he's suggesting is that during the next 5 years, Lincoln, Hadley will remain stable. Franklin will grow modestly. Churchill will grow modestly. Forest Glen will decline slightly. We still have portable classrooms, so that's, you know, part of the reality check is these numbers and what our needs are for space is not going to change. And the other thing in terms of the step back was to go back to the master facility plan and that committee work, which is really, for me, you know, the core. I remember, Drew, you asking questions several times in different ways to really kind of capture the larger question, which is, you know, what does 21st century learning space look like? Remember when you were tutoring us on that for, you know, at least a couple of years? And certainly I think we are all much more fluent around that now because of all the work we've done in the reading and certainly the leadership that Ann has provided. So when I went back to look at the master facility plan, and we talked about changing, you know, in our renovations or buildings, that we would have that breakout space, the flexibility in the classroom, that teachers will not be teaching rows of students, and we see that now. That's already changed, at least, you know, predominantly our elementary schools, but now trying to lift that up to here. That this picture, and, you know, Bob, when you make the presentation, it's, you know, my takeaway is he's giving us the texture of this and the look and the feel, right? It's visceral. But what this really, for me, needs to be about and is, when I look back to the MFP, is are we being true to ultimately what the Master Facility Planning Committee said? And that was bring outdoor in, create flexible learning space, breakout rooms. So the fact that we have, you know, anytime I've been in here and you see kids lined up here, if one of them is doing their work by themselves, it's a good day. But the most part is they're yickety-yacking and, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, kind of focused space for them. So these small group rooms, the quiet study room, the flexibility with the labs, all that, to me, is making come alive what the Master Facility Plan Committee did in their research, et cetera. So I needed to feel like that connection was made, and that was helpful for me to go back and say, what did they say we needed? And the other piece, I think, and this is to John's question as well, you know, we don't ultimately know what this is going to cost. We're going out for bid, and sometimes, Bob, you surprise us wonderfully, and it comes in, you know, way under, or you get deals, or you bundle, or whatever. But I listened to a really interesting interview that made me think about the meeting tonight and what our conversation was going to be, and it was the difference between students and the way they are kind of supported in their learning by their teachers and parents in Japan versus U.S. And one of the most concrete differences is that when a student in the U.S. does well, we align it or assign it to intelligence. You're smart, you have the capability, the mental, whatever, right? And for these teachers and parents in Japan, as they were interviewed, it was about effort and problem solving and giving them work that was knowing it was beyond them, but watching them, you know, put the effort in. And then when they did well, whatever well is, they, you know, what they were told is, you put the effort in, you figured out the problem. And some of what I think, again, we're trying to do here is to do what you just said, Chris, is bring the kids in, let them use the space like John is suggesting, where they come together, they problem solve, they have the tools that they can then do their work, because it goes back to the ownership piece. So, you know, the numbers are, are daunting on some level. It's huge, and we need to see it and set with it and then go out to bid and see where it comes in. But if we're going to live with our original plan from 2-3 years ago, then at least for me, I see it coming together in a, you know, in this format.
I guess all I'm saying is, if people, you know, some people have said it seems like a lot of money in construction, you know, and if that's a deal killer, so to speak, then maybe a way to look at this is to, you know, have a couple of options in terms of how it's doing that.
Well, we don't know that yet. You know, I mean, it's not, I can't imagine it's a deal killer to the extent that we don't know what it's going to commit at, you know.
Well, you have an estimate, so if you're willing to spend $1 million, it's not a deal killer for you.
No. And to the extent, you know, you brought up the point, do we need to move the door, et cetera, you know, part of the creation of space, you know, not just practically, right, but also the creation of that this space is truly different. And, Chris, you said this. You used the word hope. I would use the word expectation will be that with this new space, it is expected that. Similar to, Dan, your concern when we were putting the smart boards in, remember? And you asked a really good question, and it was, are we going to use these to their capability, or are these just going to be high-tech blackboards? Right? And so that expectation, that has come true through professional development, setting expectations for use, all that. That whole shift in this picture here is you're going to learn differently in this space.
I just want to clarify, this is just to go out to bed. So we're having this discussion about, you know, in context of we're looking to go out to bed. So no final decisions have been made. The board hasn't voted, taken a vote on the expenditure. So I just want to put that on the table. The second thing is, you know, there's and John, you've actually, you know, trumpeted this charge quite often about, you know, it's not about furniture. We need to go into one of our buildings and take the walls down and actually make this space. While that's what we're doing, that is what this concept is to do exactly what you've been asking to be done in the elementary buildings. Here's an opportunity for us to actually take the walls down and make the space that we've been heralding that has been needed. So I'm not an architect. I'm not an educator. I'm not going to mess with the spaces that you, the professionals, have deemed what is necessary. I mean, I can ask questions about it, but it's not my place. This is to be a 21st century learning. If that means making it a flexible space, taking down walls, lifting ceilings, putting glass in, then that's what this is all about. This is an opportunity for us to actually implement something that came out of our study and our group from a few years ago with a noticeable change that was more than just paint and furniture. This is an actual 21st century potential space. So
just anecdotally, we shared with our finance advisory committee, we shared, you know, some of the things that we're looking at down the road and asking for some, you know, feedback from them and getting their reaction. And one of the members of our advisory committee was also a member of the Master Facilities Steering Committee. And when we described, and showed the renditions to that group. He was so excited. And one of the reasons he was excited was because he had had a chance to do some site visits and see some places in other districts where they had, you know, really had a chance to create some very inviting educational spaces. He looked at this and said, this is what we need in order to create the visual of what it can be, because people here don't know what it could be because all of our schools, you know, are a little bit older, and so not everybody has the opportunity, obviously, to go out and visit others. But so while that's not the purpose behind this, it's certainly one of the impact potentials to say, this is where we're trying to head with our master facilities planning, and this is an example of what, you know, we'd like to see and hope for our buildings to become.
And I agree that this is nice space. I agree that this is what I have said in terms of space. But my point has always been, if we're going to spend $1 million, I'd rather do it in 4 classrooms and put this kind of space in 4 classrooms.
Yep,
that's all. So if we're going to spend $1 million here, and then we spend $1 million somewhere else, that's always been my. Mm-hmm. That's always been.
I understand.
I have nothing against this space. It's a beautiful space. We saw a similar thing like this at Lake Forest.
I was going to say it was right.
But mm-hmm. It was underutilized when we went there, and I would love to have this space. Nothing against the space. Take it out to bid. My point has always been in the classroom.
But this is a classroom.
But this is a classroom, John. And the thing is about this space is that
1,200
students go through this, not just one or two groups of children in our buildings that don't really get to do that. So it's going out to bid, and I understand the cost, but this is our opportunity to actually lead and put this into our buildings that we've been talking about.
The other thing we haven't talked about that was also included in this were the other summer capital projects, STEM labs, Hadley Painting, 21st Century, plus some other district-led projects.
Mm-hmm.
So my only question as those relate to this is, are we for sure doing these other items?
I would say we hope to do all those other items. Those would come forward in January. So before you take action on this project, there will be that kind of coinciding of the big picture, because we're not ready to do that. We're also looking, when Think Tank makes its report to the board, there have been some adjustments in terms of the STEAM environments, and so we may not see the same cost at the schools for STEAM labs that we originally projected, because they may in some cases be just one classroom, which means we wouldn't be doing construction or taking down walls. Places where they might be in two classrooms, we might be having a portable wall, which would mean we again not have to take down walls, and so that may be something we're going to phase in with a little different cost tag associated with it. Painting, we still are hoping to paint this building, what am I missing? Is that the only other
fire alarm?
The fire alarm. And that's really a life safety issue for us.
Yeah, and the only reason I'm asking is, I guess I see the STEAM labs as for me as a higher priority, and I just if this other effort impacts that or distracts it in any way.
We would see them as partners, and really again trying to create as much opportunity as we can within the constraints of our current facilities for 21st century learning, for creating a STEAM environment in our elementary. We wouldn't see this as an either or. We do see some of the physical limitations of our elementary in terms of the physical space and what we're able to sacrifice. I mean, you know, we have several issues that we're grappling with around that, plus the renewal of the STEAM curriculum, which will happen next year.
I share some the citizen that provided some commentary today. You know, I have to agree. You know, obviously I have a strong interest in science. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see some more better differentiation.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is my wrong perception. It feels like I've been hearing about science curriculum changes ever since I started on the board. Mm-hmm. Seems like it just feels like it's always been like a year or two out, and yet. And so I don't know, when is it actually supposed to happen?
Well, the Common Core standards, maybe that's what you've been hearing, is that it's taken the final draft of the Common Core standards to be a long time developed. And so that may be what you're referencing. And we obviously, we're not going to adopt a new science curriculum without seeing those standards. They will be finalized this spring. And next year, the science committees will revise the science curriculum and will purchase really what will be STEM curricula to align with the Common Core science standards.
I just thought, I swear we were supposed to, I thought we were, maybe it was outside the Common Core, we were due for a science curriculum overhaul.
We would have been probably done one last year or this year, but because of the Common Core, we didn't.
Okay.
It was, you know, trying a lot of work has been done and undone around the Common Core standards as they emerge. So
just briefly, I share the same concerns with the STEM project, and I was just wondering if we're going on a parallel timeline. But I, from your answers, it's sort of yes and sort of no.
Well, it's a parallel timeline in the sense that we would expect both of those proposals to. We would hope that we'd see implementation of both in the 2013-14 school year. The bidding process is a little different for the STEM work because it wouldn't be as massive. We would be using the classrooms that we have and creating the lab environment. Hopefully, and some schools will be able to use two classrooms, so we'll have the big lab environment, and then we'll be purchasing the kind of furniture and equipment that would go with that.
Now, and this may be a dumb question, but STEM labs in the elementary schools, and am I missing that? Where's this? Is the STEM lab at Hadley? Is there one here, or is this?
Well,
the
science lab, you can do really it anywhere. The idea is that you need a greater space, an extended space, which we'd even see the learning center here at Hadley could function in some aspects as a STEM lab, depending on how we arrange things here. But we would look to have STEM reconfigurations, perhaps, in the science department. But as Karen's talked to the science teachers, they think they, once we get the new curriculum, they'll have lab spaces that, while not perfect, they'll be able to do in many of the science labs they have here.
So to Dan's point, Mr. Shanahan, who talked about differentiation in the science curriculum, that could be a real possibility based on these new Common Core standards and new space that could possibly be used.
Well, possibly. I mean, I guess I need a little more time to really process what differentiation means, because what we're really looking at is every child being exposed to higher order thinking, entrepreneurial development, creativity. As Chris said earlier, not only accessing information, but doing something with that information. And we don't see that as reserved for just some kids.
But I guess I should say that maybe elevate the entire science curriculum.
Absolutely. We absolutely have to do that.
Okay. I mean, I didn't mean to.
Yeah, that's a mandate for us.
Yeah.
Is we have to.
But I think you're right. Tom is talking about something more specific to, I think, enrichment. At least that's how he described it to me.
Sound like an honors
versus
class.
Yeah, versus like we have algebra. You know, why couldn't we have a science curriculum that had biology?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Not that specifically, but I think that's
right.
Yeah.
I think that might solve the problem. If,
We'll be updating the to align with the Common Core and heavy, as you know, Karen has mentioned to you before, heavy emphasis on engineering in the Common Core.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Couldn't we also do some of that through exploratory, too?
Sure.
I mean, that
mm-hmm.
would be...
And use this space?
Well, I don't know. I was talking about this space. I was talking about his...
And John, I think that the point with some of those exploratories was to be able to do that,
right.
But I think due to certain scheduling conflicts and different things, how some of these classes have gotten in, it doesn't... For example, I know Mr. Windler teaches an Imagineering class, which is really engineering
mm-hmm.
and does a lot of really interesting. So that core extension would be, I believe, Karen, if I'm correct, and that core extension would be that extra differentiation if you could, if it worked into your schedule, would allow kids to be exposed to some of those things.
Yeah, or again, don't know how this works, but it would be, you know, maybe you take your 45 minutes of science and then you've got your exploratory attached to it of another 45 minutes, which follows the curriculum, but then takes it to, you know, some other level.
Right. Yeah, there's all kinds of, and you're absolutely right. There's tons of possibility in terms of what could happen in expanding and building on the whole Hadley New Horizons.
Because I know when that, I think in the last board report, whatever, the PTA meeting, the Lincoln one, you know, they were all for accelerating STEM and willing to contribute funds and, you know.
Yeah, I think there is really good buy-in.
It's the Glenbard Associate District. I mean, does Glencrest teach the equivalent of freshman year biology that you enter Glenbard South taking chemistry? I just brought up Glenbard South's enrollment book, and I didn't see that offer for freshmen. I did at Wheaton North see chemistry for freshmen, but...
Yeah, not that I'm aware of, and so I sent an email to 89 just to find out from them kind of what it is that they're offering.
Because, yeah, I think...
We're not aware of it, so I just don't...
That's a whole year of biology,
and
I would think there'd have to be a bit of coordination to
between the schools,
to start in chemistry, probably honors chemistry, I would think, if you're already accelerated.
Yeah, we haven't... that's not been a part of the GCC conversation, and so my guess is it probably is... There maybe has been an arrangement of students in some kind of fashion, but we're not aware of any curriculum.
Okay.
Well, and a concern is you want to be sure that the high school is going to offer 3-4 years of science for kids, because in some cases you can have biology and an AP,
Right.
Yeah.
So we need to be sure that we're in sync with them so that they're done with chemistry and physics and then there's not...
Well, it's the same thing with math, because, I mean, there's more IP classes in science that you could apply to places, whereas, like, the multivariate calculus, you know, you basically, it's a correspondence course with a high school teacher sitting there. But, which I've talked to people, and it's working out, so they're happy with it, I guess. But, yeah, I would be interested, because it does look like maybe 200 does something, but I don't...
We don't know, it's more
sane enrichment. And I can say, at least my kids were here when I came to school during Parents' Day. The science teacher was differentiating if there was a group assignment where certain students would get a little more, there was an expectation that the report would be a little more in-depth or, you know, given some extra things. So I wouldn't say, like, they were given extra curriculum, like, you know, they're ready to take a different class in high school, though.
Well, and I know that there is some extension material, there's an extension material that the science teachers can give out that actually ties into math. And then it's not through Odyssey, but I'm trying to remember the...
Gizmos.
Yes, yes.
Some simulations.
Yes, so the teachers are doing, they are differentiating and giving students...
But even in English, it's enrichment. You're not starting in sophomore English from eighth grade. And so
I don't know if the focus.
I know we're talking about it.
We're not in closed session, but we are out of.
I was just going to say here,
motion.
Talking to Drew, this room, other than painting furniture, is exactly the way it was in 1976. And Drew was here even earlier.
I think 73.
Not that much earlier, but yeah, just a little bit.
At least 40 years, this has not changed.
Yeah.
At all. Period.
Well, and the one last thing I would say is, you know, we've been talking about the budget, and the Finance Committee has already asked Bob to bring back what might we use that, you know, above 25% for, and we may be in a position to be able to access some of those dollars. So, you know, the moons might line up where this is the right time and place to do it, not only based on our Master Facility Planning Committee work, but also for the budget this year. So who knows, right?
I mean, I think you want to make it special, but as everyone said, I mean, I don't know the cost. When you say construction and you have that number, you know, does somebody custom have to make that round light? You know, do each construction company go and bid that separately because they have to bring in a special artisan to do this, or is that a standard fixture that everyone orders? I mean, I want to do it, but I'm just saying.
You see, see a lot of those. My guess is that there's probably some innovation.
You talk about some custom stuff here, and I think that's what people say. Is that driving up the cost of this, other than trying to
We'll have to see.
Right. Yeah. It's going out to bid, and we'll see what they have to say. And we'll see. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody. Great questions. Okay. I want to encourage, too, you know, as we process this, if we have questions, let's get them to Bob ahead of time so he can do some research like Karen did about checking with 89, et cetera. So, you know, get questions in early. We have upcoming meetings, November 26, 2012, regular board meeting, 7:30 back at Central Services Office. And then December 10, 2012, we have our public hearing on the levy, and that's at 7:15 at the Central Services Office, along with our regular Board of Education meeting at 7:20 or immediately following the public hearing, again at Central Services. I want to mention briefly that we will not have a president meeting tomorrow morning based on my schedule, so Ann and I will regroup, and then I'll get an email out in case anybody wants to come, which is another great opportunity to dig a little bit deeper on these issues. So if you're able to come, you know, I welcome that, whomever is able to do that. Are there any other matters to be considered by the board at this time? All right. Is there anyone present who wishes to address the board at this time? I want to publicly thank Chris for staying and giving us all that great insight.
Happy to.
May I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.